people point out that during this time, this is right around when they were splitting the atom, and it was like the antithesis of the nuclear bomb. It was as though like the nuclear bomb got this reflection in this incredible compound that instead of annihilating humans and buildings and incinerating people, had the ability to annihilate identity itself, or what we thought we were. Yeah.
Baby, I'm just rapping to this LSD. She ain't a stranger to the city life. I introduce her to this hippie life. We make love under pretty lights, LSD.
This is so much fucking extra work. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, everybody. I'm your host, Ari Shaffir. You might know me from the guy who just did this fucking podcast for 18 minutes and forgot to press record on the goddamn camera. Are you fucking kidding me? What the fuck? How irresponsible am I? This is what happens when you try to produce shit alone. I am in a fucking bomb shelter. A la 10 Cloverfield Lane. Remember that? And the guy from fucking Roseanne turned out to be the bad guy. I thought he was going to try to fuck that chick. He didn't care about sex. All he cared about was staying safe away from the fucking gas attack. That movie, it was okay. It wasn't great. Really, it almost nothing to do with Cloverfield Lane, but or Cloverfield, whatever it's called. But it's almost like they had a script for something interesting, and then they were like, "Can we make this about the Cloverfield movie?" And they're like, "Well, I guess we could." Cloverfield, fucking T.J. Miller's first big movie role. He was the guy holding the camera. He wasn't on much, but he was the guy holding the camera. What was I going to say? Anyway, I'm here doing all this shit myself. Bomb shelter waiting for fucking the Wuhan virus. What if I called it the Korean virus? What if I was more racist than Trump and I called it the Korean virus? and they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, it's all this. He's like one step below. He should get a more racist vice president. Can you switch vice presidents in the middle? If he wins his next election, I think he should go get a second vice president who's more racist, says even crazier things, takes the heat off him. Dude, how much do you think Mike Pence was like, impeach him, put me in charge, this is my way in? I really don't care about politics. I think until somebody's like, hey, we're pulling out of all wars, I'm not getting involved. But I would be, it's if you look at it from a politician, like the best you can do is president, right? So Mike Pence is like, this is my way fucking in. That'd be great. Get like a way more racist vice president to make yourself seem like, hey, I try to control him, you guys. Come to me for your straight talk. Anyway, Duncan Trussell's on this week's episode. Duncan Trussell is one of the most interesting guys that you will ever meet. Although you probably won't ever meet him. So he's one of the most interesting guys that I've ever met. He is fucking out there. One of the first Buddhists they ever met. People who like study the Buddhist philosophy. At the time, I wasn't teaching yoga classes like I am now. Now I'm enlightened. I've reached nirvana. I teach a yoga class. Legitimately, I do. If you want to go, youtube.com/skeptictank. Every day. I'm on day, like, what am I on now? 16, 17, maybe 18. For 30 days. And then I'll go like two or three times a week. I'm teaching a yoga class, for real. I mean, it's real yoga moves, but I'm not handling it seriously. But now I'm enlightened, and I look at people like Duncan, those kind of Buddhists, as like, child's play. I've reached nirvana. I've talked to Buddha. I understand things that people like him could never understand. But anyway, I can't believe I just fucking did 18 minutes and didn't fucking press record. I mean, did it fill up? No, I just simply didn't press record. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you, dude? Anyway, so my first thought was, let's talk about, since the show comes out, okay? The Midnight Gospel on Netflix. And dude, I can't wait for this show. Even if it wasn't Duncan, I couldn't wait for this show. I mean, honestly. So it's Pendleton Ward. I don't know if you guys know him. He's the guy from Adventure Time. That shit is so far out there. and Duncan Trussell, who's also fucking out there. All he used to do, I mean, he lived in my apartment complex. I lived in his. And, we prank each other so fucking good. I don't know how, but he would leave his door open and I would leave my door open, or he'd find a way in. I know how he found a way in. It was the slats on the windows. You could like slowly pull them up and just really reach around and then like unlock the door. I would just find my toilet would be Vaseline. I'd be like, what the fuck? I didn't get it at first. And then, and then I realized it was Duncan. So I'd fuck with him, do something at his apartment. And then he'd come back to mine and just have a glass of piss in my fridge. You guys think that I'm originators of these things. I've been taught by the people around me. I didn't grow in a fucking Petri dish by myself. I am a product of my environment. The people who told me to fucking go for it creatively, I didn't come up with that much shit myself. Joe Rogan, people like that were like, fucking go harder. And I fucking honor those people by fucking pushing it all the time. Joey Diaz, the way he fucking, oh my God. Holtzman, all these comics I saw were like, fucking wow. Poison Ivy's really bad. The last podcast I did with Duncan, I had massive Poison Ivy last year. I did his, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. We're not talking about that. His show comes out. The plan was, in better times, like 2 months ago, I was like, hey, next time I'm in LA, or next time you're in New York, let's record a podcast. I'll release it the week of your show. Midnight Gospel. It's on Netflix either in 2 days or right now on 420, Monday 420. Right? Yeah, Midnight Gospel. So Pendleton Ward, the guy who did Adventure Time, and Duncan Trussell. And what they did is they took pieces of his podcast, of his crazy podcast, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, which you also want to check out, and they took the audio, put cartoon over it, Pendleton and the Titmouse guys. Titmouse did the intros for This Is Not Happening, season 3, when Comedy Central's like, we don't have it. Even though we're giving you about 10% of the budget that fucking goddamn Comedy Jam is getting, we don't have enough money to do your fucking opens anymore. So, cut back. 10% of the, I mean, you should have seen the budget we had and what we accomplished. They didn't care about us at all. And all we did was deliver. I'm not gonna talk about that. What was I gonna say? So those Titmouse, Duncan Trussell, Pendleton Ward, and it's his audio. This is what he told me a year ago. I was like, wow, how are you gonna do that? And he's taking pieces out and setting it to long form, like stories that he puts, like I call psychedelic style art over it. He would just call it, you know, art or cartoon. Duncan got me in. I mean, he really was one of the first guys I ever met that was into psychedelics. So the plan was, why don't we do, since your show is premiering on 420, why don't we do a fucking 420 themed podcast? You know, we'll just talk about marijuana. We got sidetracked early and fucking forget it. We're going in different directions. Because the 19th, hopefully that's tomorrow, April 19th, is called Bicycle Day. And it was the first time, he told me in this episode, that someone intentionally dosed themselves with acid. Something Hoffs. Albert Hoffs? I don't know. We talked about it in the episode. So to celebrate Bicycle Day, I'm putting this podcast out, hopefully a day before. Hopefully it'll be out on the 17th or 18th. So you guys can get ready. I know you might be in quarantine, but he's calling it Psychedelic Christmas, and I'm going to call this episode Psychedelic Christmas, because that's what we're going to talk about. Dude, 420 was supposed to be the day that all these comics do shows. 420 was actually one of my favorite. So the worst day to do comedy is Halloween. Pointless. Never go to a show on Halloween. Never do a show on Halloween. It's ridiculous. Everybody wants to make it about themselves and their costumes. It's not how stand-up comedy is. It's about the guy on stage and not the people in the audience. They should be enjoying it, but they shouldn't be dictating how the show goes. New Year's sucks. Rogan always said he didn't do New Year's shows, and the reason was because he goes, why would you charge $75 for a show on Wednesday, then you're charging $25 for the same show on Thursday and Tuesday? Doesn't make any sense. It's the same show. And I always kind of agreed with him. And then we ended up doing some New Year's shows, and they suck. It's okay if it's like a 7 o'clock show over at 8:30, 9, and you go out to a party from there, pre-show. It's a great way to spend New Year's. I'll allow that. By 11:45, people start like wanting to hit the noisemakers. They start wanting to go nuts. Is this on? Yeah, we're still good. I'm shell-shocked now from that fucking thing going up. 18 fucking minutes. Who's gold? Jerry Gold. Midnight Gospel, 420, Netflix. You're literally doing nothing else. Anyway, so we did some New Year's Eve shows, and I just didn't care for them. I'd rather just go to a house party. I'd rather spend that day to myself, and those shows suck, and I don't want to charge my fans for fucking shows that I don't think are good enough. 420 shows, however, works great for stand-up, because what do you want to do when you get high? It's a celebration of getting high, right? My favorite thing is my friend Rebecca that I met in Beijing, fucking white chick, Jewish chick from the Upper East or Upper West Side in New York, you know, old school money Jew, fluent in Mandarin. I mean, fluent. I always thought it was so funny when those people like lived in China that I met, they lived there for like 5, 7, 9, 10 years, didn't speak any Mandarin or Cantonese. And I was like, what have you done? Not her. She's so smart. But her father needed her help on 420. And she goes, oh, Dad, I can't. It's a holiday. It's a marijuana holiday. And he goes, well, how is it a holiday if you do the same thing you do every day? And she was like, yeah, good point. You got me. I'll fucking help you. Yeah, 420 is weird because it's like, it's a celebration. It should be like, well, I never smoke pot on 420. You know what? Fuck it. I'll take a toke to celebrate the old day. But people get high every day now. It's not very hard to come across. You just go to a fucking store and buy it. Get a drop ship from your favorite grower in a legal state. Whatever. However you get it. Did I ever tell you I had a dealer cut me off? He was late and late and late. And he kept being later and later and later. And me and Sam Morrill were going to see Whiplash. We did a podcast about it on this podcast, Skeptic Tank. Eventually, I was like, hey, dude, I got to go. I'm texting with him. First, he goes, I'm 6 blocks away. And I was like, okay. And I waited 10 more minutes, 6 New York blocks. It's like, it takes 3 minutes to get there. And I'm like, hey, where are you? He goes, I'm almost there. I was like, fuck. And then eventually, I'm like, hey, I got to go. 15 minutes I waited for him to walk the 6 blocks. I got to go. And then he's like, hey, I'm here. I'm like, well, I said I have to leave. So I fucking turned around to go into my apartment. We had to go through the apartment into a courtyard, the old apartment. I don't live there anymore. Into a courtyard. And then behind the courtyard was some more, another area, another like building. You go up the steps to my apartment. And I'm like, I don't have time. Let's just do it right here. He goes, no, this is shady, man. I'm like, dude, you're so late. And I had never bought weed from a legit weed dealer in New York. And I was like, anyway, come on. And so we're done. I was like, what's your name? And he's like, just looked at me like, I'm not telling. And he goes, dude, this is the shadiest deal I've ever made. I'm like, well, you're very late. I don't know, man. I'm just used to dealing with it in L.A. You go to a store like a gentleman, you buy weed like a fucking grown-up. Not the shady fucking under the stairwell things. And he goes, dude, I'm never selling you again. I'm like, well, I don't want you selling to me again. You took fucking forever. I didn't know that's how it works with New York weed dealers. Anyway, 420 shows are great because what better thing to do? Get high and go watch comedy. You giggle. You laugh. Don't get obliterated. Get fucking normal high. It's a great experience. Get obliterated later. Just get high. Watch a fucking fun comedy show. Do you remember what he talked about? I sure do not. Doesn't matter. Anyway, all those 420 shows canceled the shit. I wasn't going to be in America. I was going to be in Kenya on 420. Those plans got canceled too. So, whatever. Fuck. I forgot about that. Fucking, that would have been so fucking cool. I was going to work on a farm in Kenya for like a month and a half. Anyway, whatever. Everybody's going through it. So, I thought, since your show comes out, Midnight Gospel, on 420, why don't we talk about weed? We quickly veered into something else, into psychedelics. He told me about Bicycle Day. It's the first day I told you that someone intentionally gave themselves a dose, a hit of LSD. So we just started talking about that. Duncan was one of the first guys I ever knew who ever had done any acid. My friend growing up hid the mushrooms. I thought it was so fucking weird. Done it a couple times, but like, Duncan was a Sid head. I mean, Diaz, but I didn't really know Diaz then. But Duncan, for sure, Duncan gave me my first ecstasy. It was called ecstasy back then. So the, Jesus, I mean, this is so meandering and wandering, but whatever. By the way, all these podcasts now have full video on youtube.com/skeptictank. Check it out. Subscribe. That's where the yoga is. That's where Sixth and Jump, the new podcast with me, Dan Soder, and Big J Okerson. We talk about 21 Jump Street episode by episode. Watch the fucking episode, then listen to our podcast. Watch the episode, listen to our podcast. That's on youtube.com/skeptic. Also got its own RSS feed. So go get it on iTunes also and all those other places. Same as this. Subscribe, please. Tell people about this podcast and the other ones. And that's where yoga is too. But so here's how ecstasy was back then. And I don't know. Ecstasy, Molly, Mandy, MDMA, whatever you want to call it. I believe, through no research, just from hearing through the grapevine, that it used to be pure MDMA. This is before I started taking it. This is like in the 90s or 80s, I think. And then I remember Paulie had a bit about taking Molly. And I was like, oh, interesting. It was big in LA. It was big in rave scenes, obviously. And then they started mixing it with speed, with other stuff, amphetamines, I guess, but with other things. Fucking cleaner, you know, shit like that. Detergent. I don't know what else, but speed. And people are like, oh, I don't like ecstasy now because it's not just the ecstasy. It's got speed in it. So it's not just the MDMA. It's this, the combination, but not me. I love the speed. I'm all about the speed. And so there were these different kinds. They had their stamps on them. And the stamps would show you like who the drug maker was. They had the Buddhas, the dolphins. There were some other ones. Acid kind of had the same thing. For a while, the Rick and Morty acid was really good. It was on a Rick and Morty fucking, you know, cut sheet. I'm trying to think what else there was. Well, obviously the happy face is like a normal one. The happy face acid, you know, you know, that should be the fucking graphic for this podcast. It should be an acid happy face, maybe with Psychedelic Christmas is the name of this episode. Because 419 is that day, is bicycle day. And I'm calling it, and so did he, Psychedelic Christmas. And it should be that guy, acid, with one of those fucking Santa hats coming down. Maybe it's Duncan as this, or maybe Duncan as the eyeballs, or maybe me as one of the eyeballs, Duncan as the other eyeball. Psychedelic Christmas. Yeah. Well, I don't make the art. Other people do. And I pay them $30 for their time. What was I going to say? Okay. So back then it was, I think we took the Buddhas, which would make sense. If I was writing this as a story, it would make sense that Duncan gave me the Buddhas. We went to a bar on Sunset, the Good Bar. It's probably not there anymore. It's down towards the end of Sunset, towards the west end where it becomes residential. But right before it becomes residential, where the Hamburger Hamlet is on the north side, hopefully that's still there. I don't know. It was the Good Bar. And Sergio Love was there. I think he was taking the MDMA to the ecstasy. It was ecstasy. It was an ecstasy pill. I believe it was the Buddhas. Duncan gave me one. And then after a while, we're all having fun. He goes, it'll take a while to kick in. He goes, don't drink. Just drink waters. Trust me. Don't just drink waters, which is like great. And I would give that tip to anybody. Like, don't bother with alcohol. You might sip a drink. If you have to, you have to. But you're going to be dehydrated. So drink lots of water, which is why at those rave places, they'll sell water for like $6 each because no one's buying shit. And at some of the places, these crazy fucking dance club I've been to, people just take their head and just run under the faucet. It's fucking nuts there. Everybody's sweating. It's like cover charge. You have to charge a cover charge. Anyway, after about an hour, Duncan's like, do you feel? Yeah, because he was feeling it, right? He had already been opened up to it, I think. And I was like, yeah, I think sort of. And he goes, well, no, you don't feel it. I'm like, no, it's like a tingling and maybe in your cheek a little bit. He was like, you don't feel it yet. And I wanted to, man. I wanted to blend in. I wanted to fit in and say, like, of course. No, I feel it. I'm with the party. You know, you want to. It was cool to be fucking tripping with everybody. The Midnight Gospel on Netflix. Watch it on April 20th. But he was like, you're not feeling it. I was like, no, I think I am. And he goes, dude, trust me. And I'm looking back now. Obviously, I know. And Duncan was trying to dose me properly. He was trying to make sure that I got the right amount. So you start with one and you go up from there, which on some drugs is the right way to go. I would say if edibles didn't take so long to kick in, that'd be the right way. It's like, take 5 milligrams. That might crush you. If that doesn't, take five more. Don't start with fucking 50. Other drugs, I would not. I don't advise that. I pride myself on properly dosing people. I really do. I have messed up 2 times. I have fucked up. Once I got out of my head and I fucking dose someone against their without them knowing, and it was a mistake, clearly a mistake, didn't work out. If it had worked out, it wouldn't have been a mistake, but it did. Fucking anxiety went crazy, and it was off. It was a mistake. I shouldn't have done it. But I always properly, like if you ask me, especially on mushrooms, them is the key. I'm like, how fucked up do you want to get? And then if I don't think they want to, if they tell me I just want to barely feel it, I will try to talk you into trying to get more fucked up, but I won't get you more fucked up unless you say, yes, I want to. I'll be like, how much have you taken before? How much have you taken before? When's the last time you ate? You know, how much does this normally hit you? Shit like that, you know? A Big J, I remember in Bonnaroo, I got mushrooms for, well, I didn't get them. This guy from Chicago, fucking, thank you, dude. I'm not going to say your name, but that was a great Bonnaroo. You fucking made it. I got mushrooms for the entire comedy of Bonnaroo. People were coming up to me. I had 2 ounces, I think, half a pound. I don't even know what it was. People come up, Nick Thune, Natasha, they were coming up to me. He's like, hey, Ari. I'm like, hey, Natasha, what's going on? She goes, do you have mushrooms? I'm like, I sure do. And here you go. It was so fun. Oh, it was so fun. Ralphie was there. I got mushrooms for him. Ralphie, fuck, I ate them. Ralphie didn't give a fuck, man. He went, he got down. anyway. 546, we're okay. So, what was I going to say? Oh, so Jay, I remember Jay going like, I just kind of want to barely get fucked up. Just like a little bit. I just want to feel it. I don't want to get too fucked. And I'm like, well, I will get you there if you want. I will, because here's the deal. Also, some of it is up to the drug. You do your best to judge, but some of it's up to the drug. The same amount I take on the same empty stomach on, you know, on Thursday the 15th, if I take it on Tuesday, you know, of 3 months later, the same exact amount on the same empty stomach, I'm getting 10 times as fucked up. And it's up to the drug a lot of times. But you do your best chance to fucking judge correctly. And that's what I'll do. I'll maximize your odds to like where it is. So Jay was like, I just want to get so fucked up. But I'm like, but why, Jay? Because you're at Bonnaroo. You're at a place that's completely enclosed. You can't wander off and get too fucked up. You can't get into danger. I mean, there's medics everywhere. There's people, if they see you fall over, they will call a medic instantly. You can't get hit by a car. And he's like, all right, maybe I'll go a little more. So then you give everybody the right amount. At Glastonbury last year, I was passing out mushrooms. I got mushrooms. That was my job. Everybody else, the London people, they brought coke. They brought MD or Mandy, whatever they call it. Ari, is the I brought the mushrooms. And thank you. I'm also not going to say your name, but thank you. You made our fucking group. I still owe you a t-shirt. I don't know why fucking Lewis hasn't sent the fucking t-shirt when I told him fucking 3 times. Send the fucking t-shirt. Send the fucking Shroomfest shirt. I didn't go out myself, if that helps at all. Anyway. So I was passing out mushrooms to each person. Have you taken them before? You want to get fucked? Yes, okay. And I gave them to one lady, and she drinks hard. She goes hard. She goes, why'd you give me as much, way more than them? I'm like, because you can handle it. And she was like, yeah. And then she just took him. Rachel, we were walking, and one guy, I think he drank too much too, and he was like walking like fucking this, Harry. Just like, oh. And Rachel's like, oh, I want to be that fucked up. I was like, oh, well then take more. I didn't give you enough. I didn't realize I want to be that fucked up. Helen, not Rachel. Not Rachel. Sorry, Rachel. You did fine. What was I going to say? Anyway, certain environments are perfect for fucking, it's almost always music festivals. I was actually at Glastonbury that year and was taking acid. And I remember taking like half a hit of acid. I don't know where I got the acid. I don't know where I got that acid. Probably somebody from Wales. I unless I brought it myself, I got to assume it was someone from Wales who gave it to me at the show there. Because I went to Glastonbury right after that. And I think maybe I had one hit. And I tore it in half, gave the other half to my, right before the Killers, gave the other half to my friend Colette. I was like, you want a half a hit of acid? And she goes, no. And I was like, why? I'm like, oh yeah, because you've been munching mushrooms all day long. I think that was my off day for mushrooms. It was like mushrooms, acid, mushrooms. I don't know, man. What a fucking fun time. So I took half a hit. She said no to the other half. And then it was hitting me. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? If you're not going to take a fucking full hit of acid here at a music festival, where else are you? At a sleepover music festival, by the way. It's not like kind of music festival where they kick you out, like Outside Lands, where they kick you out at 11. Look at me, still holding on to the fucking hit of acid that I'm not really even holding. That's memory. Sense memory. And so
And I'm like, if you're not going to take one here, it's completely enclosed grounds. The artwork is fucking made for psychedelic drug use. At Bonnaroo, too. It is made for a trip out. And I'm like, if I'm not going to do it here, where the fuck are you going to do it, you fucking dork? You should do it one anyway. You fucking telling people to do psychedelics all the time. You're not going to take a fucking full hit of acid? One hit of acid? Took the other hit. Had a great time. Wandered around all night. Oh, what a good time memory. Anyway. So Duncan, backtrack. By the way, at that music festival at Bonnaroo, when I gave Jay those things, that's when I fucking took way too much. I gave him the right amount. I took way too much. Had to miss Kendrick Lamar. Had to miss half of Alabama Shakes, which fucking was the best one at Bonnaroo, everybody said. And then just laid on the grass, and I heard from far, far away, laying on the grass, staring up at the sun, just heard, "We gonna be all right." Anyway, what was I gonna say? So half a hit, one hit of ass of ecstasy at the good bar. Duncan's like, "You're not feeling." I'm like, "I am." He goes, "Trust me, you are not." He gave me another half. I assume he took the other half. I don't know, but I can't imagine Duncan putting another half a hit of ecstasy away. It's kind of like when I was at Burt's and I gave him. I gave him about half to two-thirds of a hit of ecstasy. I took one and a third, and then I had an extra pill left over because Mark Norman was supposed to be there. Yeah. So I had a hit for Mark Norman. I didn't want to get into, like, you get this shot glass, you get this, you know? So I had one for him. When I told Mark Norman later, he goes, "What did I miss?" I'm like, I gave Bert ecstasy. He was like, "What?" He was so jealous that he wasn't there for it. Best podcast of the year. Joey Diaz came over. And so I took one and a third. Bert took two-thirds of one. And then the last hit, Joey Diaz kept pushing in front of himself. He just came and entertained us. It was a great podcast. You'll never see it. It's out of my control. I thought it'd be amazing. Look, I fucked up. I don't get to say anymore whether or not you guys should see that podcast or not. But personally, I would love to see it at some point. What a fucking great time. So afterwards, we're hugging each other. We're like, "I love you. I love you." It was the fucking greatest time. Oh, what a fun, fun time. Diaz telling the stories. The sun was setting. And right over Diaz's shoulders, he's telling these stories. And we're just like in this amazing, oh my God, what a fucking great time. Anyway, we're cleaning up, you know. And then, yeah, Bert's like, "I gotta tell my wife, you gotta get out of here because I gotta tell my wife." And I'm like, "Ooh, I would advise against that," but whatever. We couldn't find the last hit of ecstasy. We couldn't find the last hit of MDMA. This is just pure MDMA. I like the speedy kind because I like dancing. Those old fucking pills that Duncan gave, it made you fucking dance. This new ecstasy, it's like, it makes you shake a little bit, but it's got no speed in it. It's just pure shit. Oh, I get good Molly. Every time on yoga, I do a thing at the end where I'm like, it's something I got from Steve Simone. You say five things of gratitude out loud. He does YouTube. You should follow him on Instagram. Steve Simone Comedy, maybe, but he does five things of gratitude every day. And it really helps get your mind working right. So at the end of yoga every day, I do what this is called stream of consciousness, Ari. I do a thanks. So you know when you do the thing at the end and you just breathe in and breathe out and you do, I'm shell shocked. What you do a thanks, you know? So I just have one thing to be in mind for that you're thankful for. And tomorrow, I'll do it on 419, 418, what's the family episode? For bicycle day. For psychedelic Christmas, I will do, I am thankful. Well, yeah, okay. I am thankful that I get the purest Molly I've ever had. It's great. Even people I know from fucking London, from Glasgow, who go harder than anybody. Edinburgh goes hard. Glasgow goes harder than anybody on that shit. London goes hard. Scotland puts them to shame. My friend who studied in Glasgow for 4 years. He's like, "No, I got to take two hits of MDMA, no matter what it is." One of those. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, dude. This is fucking a pure trip. This is so good." Anyway, afterwards, we're saying our goodbyes. And we're like, "Where's that last hit?" And we're like, "Maybe it fell on the floor, but dogs are around. Children are going to come to the backyard eventually. Look, I might be a fucking idiot, but I'm never going to fucking give drugs to a kid. You know, unless they're chill." Anyway, we're like, "Where's that hit?" And I called Joey. I'm like, "Joey, do that last hit. He goes, yeah, I snaked it. I took it with me. I'm going to do it later. I'm like, okay, that's smart. I thought so. He goes, yeah, I'm not going to. I saw it right there. Of course I'm going to steal it. I just put it in my pocket when you weren't looking. Joey. Anyway, so Duncan, I'm with Duncan. And he goes, no, take another half. And so he gave me another half. I assume, like I said, he took the other half. And then about 10 minutes after that, I was like, oh. And it was this feeling of like love and just like, and just having a great, I was like, dude, I feel it now. He goes, yeah. I'm like, I wasn't at all feeling it. It wasn't like I was like a little drunk and then you got way drunk or a little high and then get way high. It was like, it wasn't even, it's not even the same family. It was like you smelled weed. You know, like somebody gave you a bud and like smell it. Like, oh, I think I'm high. Like, you're not. Smoke one hit, you'll be high. Anyway, so we talked about psychedelic drug use. Bicycle Day, April 19th. I didn't even know about it. And now I know. You guys, you got to watch Duncan's show, The Midnight Gospel. You got to listen to his podcast, The Duncan Trussell Family Hour, which is always great. The last time I was on his show, I had fucking... Can you see that? No, you probably can't. I had, oh, it's going away. It's going away. Not bad. I had, what's it called? Poison Ivy. And now I have Poison Ivy again. The next time. I was on Duncan Trussell Family Hour. When he was working, I went down to Titmouse Studios and we did a fucking podcast. We recorded it right there. Go listen to that one. I bet it's good. Anyway, but you got to watch the show. You got to watch it. The Midnight Gospel on Netflix. Either right now, if you're listening after Monday the 20th, or in a day or two, if you're listening the day before Bicycle Day. I'm trying to release this on the 17th or 18th so you have enough time to take your ecstasy, to take your acid, to take your mushrooms, peyote, whatever you are, wherever you are in quarantine. Do it safely. If you got a fenced-in backyard, oh, you're in a great position. That's what you should be thankful for on Bicycle Day. You got a place where you can go outside and inside. Hopefully, it'll be a nice day. You don't have to worry about coming in contact with anybody, and you can fucking trip the fuck out. By the way, I should mention this right now. Every music festival, it sucks that I talk about music festivals. They're a great place to do psychedelic drugs. I talk a lot about music festivals on this because I've had so many experiences doing psychedelic drugs at music festivals. Acid, mushrooms, Mandy, Ket. And all these festivals are canceled, you know, for this year, obviously. They're not going to do anything. They're calling out Coachella in October. Look, hopefully. Who knows? Hopefully. I've never been to that one. But hopefully. But I will tell you. Wait, where the fuck is it? That there's one festival. What the fuck? Come on. That has not been canceled. And that festival is Shroomfest. You guys, 2020 Shroomfest is July 4th, 5th, or 6th. That means I don't know how you're going to find mushrooms this time. And maybe this is the first year you don't celebrate. Maybe you got to celebrate late. That's okay too. But the way you celebrate is wherever you want to, you just take mushrooms. People from all over the world are going to be taking mushrooms July 4th, 5th, and or 6th. There's no place to get together. I don't normally fucking, I guess it's the first day I've announced it for this year. May, June, July. Yeah, it's almost 3 months. If you already got the shrooms, fucking hang on to them till then. Because people, if you believe in some sort of cosmic unity of people that are on shrooms, it takes you to another plane, then maybe this will take you all on the plane together and you can meet up there. As everyone's quarantined in your own area, well, now you're free in the fucking nether regions. But July 4th, 5th, and 6th this year, it'll be a full moon in the northern hemisphere. Summer here, winter where Nick Cody lives in Australia, but, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I will eventually make a winter shroom fest for the southern hemisphere, but I haven't done it yet. Ants everywhere. Anyway, that festival is not canceled this year, and it will not be canceled. Just do it wisely. Do it inside your own apartments or your own houses. I go acid. No. It's for shrooms. Sorry. It's for shrooms. Even if you just got to do a little bit with your girlfriend or something like that. You know, do them like that. Anyway, let's start the episode. I don't think I have anything else to announce. I don't think there's anything to announce. Well, this was fucking meandering as shit, 34 fucking minutes. I guess some good stories. I don't know. Anyway, the point is this, you guys. Duncan Trussell is one of the most creative people I've ever met. He has driven me to be more creative in my own comedy. To see somebody fucking tackle his own style of comedy the way he wants to do it has been invigorating. He makes his weirdo stuff accessible for a normal audience, which I've tried to emulate for my own specific style. And he really has driven me to be a better comic. I have influenced by him. And it's not something you can really see. It's kind of like I heard Ozzy Osbourne say one of his biggest influences was the Beatles. And you're like, what? And look, I don't get it. But I'm sure there's something musically that he fucking tuned into. And for Duncan, it is like he has a clear sense of his own sense of humor. And he makes that sense of humor accessible to the people who are coming to see his show. Even if they're like first-time people. Now, if you don't know him at all, and suddenly you're exposed to a comedy, maybe you're like, well, I don't like this. Well, you shouldn't see it. You should be in a group of people who are trying to see it. And that's what I've learned about myself, too. People who are like, don't know me at all. Like, you're a horrible person. So many people got angry at me for the fucking tweet I did about, what's his name, Doug? Fucking Kenny Rogers. I guess they put it on some Republican blog group. And all these, like, middle-aged, like, 48-year-old, well, that's fucking my age, 48-year-old, like, retired Army vets and housewives. Like, you're a bad person. Enjoy your 5 minutes of fame. This is why you'll never get a special. And I'm like, I've had three. I wanted to be like, hey, it was like all the same day. It was like a week and a half later, and they all started coming at me the same day. And I'm like, I started responding. I'm like, where did you guys all get this today? It was like way afterwards. Did someone like send it to you? He goes, yeah, fuck you. I'm like, no, that's fine. Yeah, obviously, fuck me. I'm just saying, like, who's showing you this knowing you are going to hate it? You should ask them to not show you stuff you know you're going to hate. Anyway, rest in peace, Kenny Rogers. Let's start the episode, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, sorry for the fucking length of this fucking podcast intro. They usually go like 15 to 20 minutes. Whatever, free content. Also, don't forget to subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/skeptictank. If you don't mind, support me. Put out one a week on average, sometimes a little more. Extra fucking episodes, and I don't know. I'll start doing, once I get, now that I'm settled in my new place, I'm going to start doing pictures. I took a fucking flash drive, but I have pictures from all over the world. I'm just going to post a picture and then just write a story about it. But just for fucking Patreon people. I don't like sending out specific places. I'll talk about it on Patreon. Skeptic Tank Patreon. Anyway, that's the episode. Let's start. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 382. Tom Segura will be back on, by the way. Rogan will be on soon. Diaz will be on as soon as I get fucking, I figure out his technology. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 382, Psychedelic Christmas, with Duncan Trussell, the creator of The Midnight Gospel, on Netflix, starting April 20th. All episodes are available. He worked super fucking hard on it. Watch the show. I would for sure say to get high and watch the show. I would for sure say to do that. If not more. With Duncan Trussell, starts now.
I did acid with Caroline, and we both had a real good time. We talked till 2 in the morning, playing records, and I showed her some drawings. I did acid with Caroline, and we were one. We climbed up top of a building and looked out over the city. The night was cool, the wind was blowing, there were dead crickets everywhere. I did acid with Caroline, and we were one. I did acid with Caroline, we burnt candles all night long. She showed me strange books of black magic, my head was really spinning. I did acid with Caroline, and we were one. I did acid with Caroline, and we both had a real good time. We talked till 2 in the morning, playing records, and I showed her some drawings. I did acid with Caroline, and we were one. We were one.
How about that feeling when things get real like that? Was that, isn't that the craziest shit when it's like, you know, like I understand like normal forms of panic, like yeah. being late for a show, worrying about like, you know, basic mundane shit, but all every single one of us, we all were suddenly thrust into an apocalyptic thriller, and it was crazy. We still are, but that we moved. So we like had been looking for a place forever. We found this wonderful house in the valley
to rent. Okay.
And
smart now to rent. But it,
oh, thank God.
Yeah.
It's a compound, you know, and it's great. But we scheduled the move basically exactly when people started realizing that this was going to be a pandemic. And we just got in right under the fence, man. Like, we were able to get movers. We were able to, 2 days after we got the internet, they stopped coming to install internet. So we just got lucky. Yeah, man. I don't know. Maybe they've resumed that, but there's a garden here. Someone left this like flourishing garden with like spinach and strawberries and lettuce and fruit trees. So it was like, I swear, man, it was biblical. You know, it's like I felt like God had just brought us to the promised land. And we got so lucky, but it was really scary, man. That move was scary. Wearing a face mask with movers, you know, you just feel like such a dick. Like a snobby dude with OCD who doesn't want to like breathe the movers stink.
It's weird, but then you start looking at everyone else as the others, you know, where it's like, oh, are you out to get me with your disease?
Yeah.
Like, you can't see it. Oh, it's fucking crazy.
It's crazy.
But, you know, so far, I know it's relatively safe.
It's still relatively a tiny amount of people compared to the planet you have it. Like the odds of knowing someone in your circle who has it are pretty slim right now.
Or but suffer from it.
Yeah, 1 degree. Like my last landlord, her cousin got it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm such a dumbass, man. I was like, she was telling me, you know, he survived because he was dating a nurse. And I told Aaron, like, yeah, he survived because he was dating a nurse. And Aaron was like, he got it because he was dating a nurse. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Like, oh, right.
Yeah.
She gave him all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is weird. Like, going outside is having unprotected sex now. Like, going outside is barebacking society. That's it.
We tried to have a quarantine crew in New York for a while, and I was like, "We'll just do it." And then one of our crew was like, "Oh no, I hung out with so and so, but they're safe." Like, what do you mean they're safe? You don't show symptoms. What do you mean you're safe? It really is like you're fucking everyone they fucked.
Yeah,
instantly.
That's it.
I finally understood what all these girls are mad at me about.
That's it, man. That's exactly it. It is unprotected. You getting within 6 feet of someone, you might as well be fucking their mouth, sucking their dicks or pussies, because you know what? Also, the diseases you could get from that now are like a little less scary.
Oh, way less.
Viral pneumonia. Herpes, you know, some nice, archaic, classic venereal disease versus brand new shit that we don't understand at all.
And by the way, I've seen a bunch of people like have a cough and be like, no, I think I'm fine. I'm like, wait, how are you diagnosing yourself already? What are you talking about? Why are you putting us all in danger? Because they don't want to admit it. And now it's the same thing. People like, no, people would tell each other. I'm like, people wouldn't tell each other when they're like, had gonorrhea. Like, I'm just pissing weird. I'm sure it's fine. I can still have unprotected sex until later. Like, oh yeah, that's what that was. I probably should have canceled my date.
Wow. Yeah.
Nobody wants the worst stigmatic thing. It's worse than bed bugs.
Yeah, man. It's bad. Yeah. Well, that's the other side of it. There's like there is with this virus, the same stigma as getting VD. Like, if I get it, I don't want to announce that I got it. Like, I don't know why all these celebrities are, like, proudly coming out and saying they've got it. It's kind of...
I know why. It's because they want a story. They want something to be special, and this will make them special now.
Oh, my God. That's all they have left is to get a disease.
They got nothing. It's a fucking clear look into how fucking worthless they are.
Oh, Okay, hold on. I read a whole thing on this. This is a one of the takes is now what do they have? But give me a fucking break. I'm sitting on my couch at night when I'm done with my shit. And I am watching TV. I'm watching Escape from New York. I'm watching.
I just watched that.
Did you? It is so good.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh. It's so good. I found him. You got to get me out. He goes, no, you're not coming out, dude.
No, no, man. That character he plays is so fucking hilarious. The whole, all the way through. And also, you know what I love is that, you know, he made another of my favorite movies, The Thing. But not only that, John Carpenter also makes all the music in his movies.
No fucking way.
Yeah, that's his music. That no pulsing way. Moog, like boom, 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 boom. That's him. He wrote it, he directed it, and he made the fucking music for it. What a badass.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fucking creator.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a fucking pencil, which is the rest of these actors are. That's all they are.
Like, give me a break. Wait, who is that? Who's the main dude who played Snake? What's his name? How dare you call him a pencil?
Oh.
What's his name? Nicholas to go with the eye patch. Yeah, who plays that? That's.
He's just. I'm just saying he's not. Yeah, I'm saying he's replaceable.
How dare you, Ari?
Because I'm sitting alone and he can't fucking find me.
Yet again, you managed to hurt the world with your comedy. He's not replaceable. Nobody else could be Snake Plissken.
Yeah, that's what they always say. They always say, like, no one could do this well. I'm like, what?
I like that I'm saying that and I can't remember his name.
Good point. That's a great point. Before we go on, I do want to say your fucking show is airing on 420 on Netflix.
That's right.
It's called, I do not remember what it's called because the fucking graphics are so overwhelmingly good looking.
Thank you, brother.
The name is not even fucking.
It's called The Midnight Gospel.
The Midnight Gospel with Duck and Trussell. You and Pemberton, fucking Burning Man buddies.
Yeah.
Team up. And well, make this fucking weirdo.
Pendleton, not Pemberton. Very close.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Dude, who gives a fuck? I can't remember anything. My brain is mush. No one cares anymore. It's ridiculous. Make up. You know, this. I interviewed this singer I love named Will Oldham, and he.
Oh, yeah.
He's the best. And he was talking about how.
John Misty, right?
Well, it's not Father John Misty.
Father John Misty.
Bonnie
Prince Billy. Yep.
Now, he was saying when they were on tour, they were doing the thing where you're trying to remember some fact and you Google it to say the fact. And they realized that who cares about the fact? And so they had like I can't remember what the item was, a shell or like a box or something called I think it might have been a banana, the Google banana. And anytime anybody was going to do the thing where they pick up their phone and Google it, they would just pick up the banana and like act as though they were Googling it and make up fake shit that came up. And it was way more fun because, like, you know, the thing in a conversation where you escape into the phone, even though your intentions are good because you want to like, you know, give some fact, who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. It's the connection that matters.
It doesn't leave you there. It holds you in there for a while. So now you've shot. Now, I have a text message. Let me just return this.
Yeah.
You ever do the thing where you're looking down at your phone and somebody's like, what? You're like, oh, I'm just looking at this thing as if it's an excuse. And people are like, but none of us care.
None of us care. Nobody cares the name of the actor. No one cares the year that it happened. No one cares the date that it happened. We just want to connect. So it's Pendleton Ward and the show's called The Midnight Gospel is the name of it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. You're working on it so fucking long.
We sure did, man. Animation takes forever. It really does. And just developing a show, you know, like by the time you even get to the point where you're making it, you've already been working on it for months, you know, by the time you even get to the point where you're hiring people and crewing up and all that, it's like you've already been developing it forever.
Dude, that guy, who's that singer? What was his name again? The Billy, Bonnie Prince Billy.
Yeah.
He did this artist, Ashley May Comber, did a bunch of paintings, and they made a book out of it. And then he made a song to go along with these paintings. And they made a record, like a single record.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, that guy, you got me into that guy.
He's the best. He's the real thing, man. He's the best. We were just traveling through, and he like let us stay at his place. Just really? Like comes, yeah.
In North Carolina, right?
Yeah, he lives in. Oh fuck. Let me get the Google banana. He
lives in North Carolina?
I don't know. He might have had a place out there. I'm not sure. He lives in not Louisville. He lives in the South, man. He's just a Southern gentleman. He's like a classic Southern gentleman, like the real thing.
Yeah.
He's the best. That's and cool. And he does have like a quality of like royalty to him because he's just so fucking talented. You feel kind of like, you know, nervous around him.
Dude, isn't that weird when somebody is really talented? I do it with a couple comics too, where I'm just like, fuck, I can't get a goddamn word out.
Yeah.
It all gets like, I'm just nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel bad for them because I want to like push through that so they could have like a human interaction and not be with someone who's like secretly trembling or whatever. But you can't. It's like there's no way to cross that barrier. I don't know how to do it. You know, how to get beyond it. And people who've, you can have compassion for people like that because you realize that is their experience of most people is like.
They're trembling like, oh, what?
Yeah.
But you're the you.
Yeah, some kind of grotesque adulation. It's got to get like really lonely, I would imagine.
Okay, so because this show is coming out, and I always do a topic, and I figure like, dude, I saw an episode of Adventure Time on acid, the first one I ever saw.
Oh, cool.
So with Lee Syatt, Diaz gave us acid, and then
oh no,
30 minutes in, it was like, all right, podcast over. See you guys. I'm like, see you guys.
What? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he just goes like, well, I'm not, I can't drive anywhere.
Did he take some? Did Diaz take some?
Yeah, as much as we did.
He just went home, went to sleep. Yeah. He just went home, not just probably had a great sleep, relaxed.
Yeah, just chill. I don't know, whatever. It's like, I don't know how he does it. But anyway, we were like, well, we're not going anywhere, so let's watch some stuff. And we watched that. And it was so fucking cool on drugs, cartoons.
Yeah.
So I figure to celebrate your thing, and because it comes out on 420, as a topic, I just want to talk about weed.
Great. Perfect.
Just like, let's just like get into it as a fucking celebratory thing for this fucking plant. Like,
well, you, what? When you, what? Yeah. What? Well, you know, also that date is, and it's a psychedelic holiday, really, because the 19th of April is Bicycle Day, which is the day that Albert Hofmann intentionally took LSD. So...
Oh, really? That
was the first intentional consumption of LSD by a human. He'd contacted it in the laboratory before that, and it had some kind. And like, I think it probably, you know, it had gotten into his skin or something, and he'd had a relatively low dose. But
why is it called Bicycle Day?
Well, it's called Bicycle Day because. Having, you know, gotten it on his skin and realized that it I think he described it as it made him feel like when he was a kid playing in the woods, that first accidental time, he had this kind of like connection with nature, just a feeling of like, whoa, what's going on? So he then took on the 19th of April, you know, what a scientist might think would be a, you know, low dose of something, but not aware of the fact that this functions in the microgram. So I think he took probably these days the equivalent of like 30 hits of LSD.
Jesus.
And then rode his bicycle home.
Oh.
And looked down and was flying over the mountains. And he thought, oh, I've killed myself. I've either died. The substance I consumed has killed me. Or, you know, I've gone insane. I'm having a hallucinatory episode. He got home, had what had to have been the worst trip anyone ever had.
Doesn't even know what it was. At least when we go into it, we're like, oh, this is coming. Some level of this is coming.
Yeah, and you know you're going to come down because right. People come down.
Oh, right.
He didn't know. He didn't know if he was going to come down or not. His wife didn't know what was wrong with him. He was like laying in bed. She's like giving him milk to calm him down. Like, she doesn't know what to do.
Does that work? By the way, that works on mushrooms. Does it work on acid?
I don't think it works if you've taken, like, the first... This isn't, like, some bullshit basement acid. This is, like, Sandoz Laboratories fresh to the human realm LSD that he had just cooked up. I mean, it's like... You know what I mean? We'll never know what he went through. He describes it pretty well, but I always marvel at that. What that must have been like.
Dude, I love with drugs in small amounts, you know, where like pot edibles or like anything where they're like, just take a little. I'm like, that is so not a specific amount.
Yeah.
You got to give me some better judge of what a little means.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, you can. There's a saying that a past drug dealer of mine told me that I find really quite useful when consuming.
Drug dealers. You should make a little coffee table book, The Wisdom of Drug Dealers.
That's the best, man. What a great idea. That's brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant.
We should just start culling people from all over. Just like, hey, if any drug dealers ever told you something, we need it.
It's so smart because they're so wise. But they you know, what he said to me was, you can always take more, but you can never take less. And, you know, so it's sort of like with any substance, take a boring amount for the first. Be disappointed. It's better to be disappointed and realize you didn't correctly dose yourself. And then wait a couple of days and take, you know, a higher dose than to take a lot. So when I think of a little, I just think of like a minuscule amount that doesn't seem very exciting and just enough for me to get the slightest, you know, smell, so to speak, of what it is. There's a slight feeling to understand it. You know, I don't know if that's cowardly. I think a lot of people would say, fuck that, just dive in. But I'm too old for that shit.
I don't know, man. I think there's a thing of like breaking through. Like I compare it to like the atmosphere. If you're in a spaceship, you can't just kind of get halfway up there and then go further. Like you need that blast off.
Yeah.
And then you can take a little more, but you gotta break through to the other side. And that
depends on where you're at.
Your tolerance with like a little bit, then like taking more is like, I don't know. You can't blast off.
It's two schools of thought on it, man. It's like, you know, one school of thought, it like, if you're lucky, it will like, you'll have a divine contact with some mystical presence or enlightenment or some temporary thing, or you'll, you know, end up like what happened to my friend. He works at the, what do they call it now? They used to call it the freak out tent, but they don't call that anymore because the name, man? Well, in the old days in the 60s, they had a thing called the freak out tent, where the hippies would go who'd taken too much drugs, and they would like give them Thorazine and calm them down. Now they call it the Zendo. And like all over Burning Man, there are these stickers and posters that say, feeling a little weird? Head over to the Zendo. And they've got volunteers, people who volunteer.
The fuck? Dunk. Hello, Duncan? He's gone. All right, well, Duncan is gone. I don't know what happened. I am going to try to get him back right now. This is what happens when you do, I don't know, too much acid.
Hold on one second. I think I got two versions of this open right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me see. Hang on. Let me close down some shit. Anyway, my friend... You know, of course, you're like, what's the worst thing you ever saw working in a
freak out tent? Yeah, I was talking about the freak out tent. Yeah.
And you said that, like, this guy, like, and it's common when you see somebody who's ODing on a psychedelic, they exhibit symptoms that are similar to people who've gotten a concussion, which is they lose short term memory. So, they'll say, like, what's going on? And you'll be like, it's okay. You know, we're at a festival. You took some acid and you're tripping really hard right now. Or you're having this big psychedelic experience. And they're like, okay, yeah, I remember that. And then they'll be like, where am I? And you have to just keep telling them over and over again.
Wow. Interesting. That must be so hard to care for them when you're like, but they already know. And like, they don't.
They don't know. Their short-term memory's gone. And this guy, I think he ended up like, you know, running out into the desert and trying to like beat his teeth out with a rock. Yeah.
No way.
So like, but that was an act. That was like, what had happened in that situation was he had done like maybe one of the dumbest things you could do, which is take a vial of LSD and like drip it into your mouth. But somehow it had opened up,
on something.
Yeah. Like, I said, what are you doing? And then it just spilled all into his mouth. And then, you know, you're just like, just forget it. It's over. That's
just like,
you got about 10 seconds to fucking tell somebody what happened and have them come to you.
Yeah.
You ever see that movie Mandy?
Loved it.
Yeah, but he touches the most powerful acid in the world, and I love the cut where he just like, as soon as it touches his mouth, it goes gone. Like as soon as it touches his lip, he's in another planet.
It was the best.
Yeah.
And you know, he's telepathically communicating with the LSD manufacturer, and you know they don't get
the tiger.
Yeah, the thing is, those like the people who make LSD, they're so deep underground that we don't know who they are. You never know. You might know someone who sells LSD, but it's rare to know an LSD chemist because it's like scheduled in such an intense way that it's like you don't want to know. You don't want to know one. I don't want to know one. I don't want to
see what they dress like and be like, man, I don't trust that guy.
I don't want to be, I just don't want any connection to that level of the simulator, you know, because it's who, you know, I don't know what's going on up there, but it's lucky because that we have people who take those kinds of risks so that we have access to these wonderful medicines that expand our consciousness. You know, it must be a terrifying job.
Yeah, how did Hoff's make it? How did he know what he was trying to make, or like where did he come to that idea of making it?
Well, they were studying. I believe they were trying to find something to induce uterine contractions. They wanted something to help to induce, and so they were working with, I think, ergot or something, and so they were. I think it was, I don't, maybe not. I'm going to think I'm getting two things confused. They're basically just looking, it was Sandoz Laboratories, the same people who like Trump was just yapping about, talking about giving all these doses of chloroquine or whatever the fuck it is that people are taking. Famous pharmaceutical company like Bayer Aspirin or whatever. They were just working on, they weren't trying to make a psychedelic. And so I believe that they gave LSD-25 to a mouse. And it was like walking backwards. Its hair was standing up and tripping balls. And so they shelved it because, it's not something you're going to give pregnant women. When, like, who needs a drug that makes rats walk backwards? So
you're like, I will figure it out later. I love those kind of companies. They're like, I don't know. Let's just do it. We'll see what we can apply it to.
Yeah, exactly. Who needs that shit? And then he had an instinct or something about it. Like,
Duncan, what other backgrounds do you have that's going to make you not throw up?
Are you getting sick from my rotating?
It's the spinning. It's the focusing on your stillness, I think, and the spinning.
It's making you feel sick? What about that one? What about this?
Lovely. Lovely. What is that? Okay, as long as I don't have that disease that makes you shake with
oh fuck, I forgot. Oh my god, that shit is so not funny, man. Hold on a second. Shit. Hold on.
What is that disease?
I'll get rid of that. Damn it. How do I get rid of that? Shit, man. I don't know how to turn that off. Here we go. Is it gone?
Yeah, it's something else though, but it's still flashing. What is that disease that makes you?
There we go.
That makes you do that.
Epilepsy. Sorry, guys. Epilepsy. That shit ain't funny, man. I'm sorry. You should cut that out if you can. That really sucks for people. It sucks.
We'll make an epileptic warning, and we'll put the time code.
There. Is that better? Is that less spinny? Is that less nauseating?
It's way less spinny. It was just like it was spinning around and around. And maybe it was the acid talk, too, but it was throwing me back somewhere.
Oh, shit. Well, there you go. That's a little more calm.
As long as you got the eagle there.
Okay. Exactly. And everybody knows what I mean by that. I'm a bottom. it was like the whole, for those of us who love LSD, it's basically psychedelic. The 19th is psychedelic Christmas. We all feel a great debt of gratitude to Hoffman. And,
that's the name of this episode.
What, psychedelic Christmas?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, because think of what, thanks to his, dosing himself and thanks to his instincts and thanks to, his.
It's crazy that he's willing to experiment on himself. That seems so unscientific.
I know, man. I know. That's the other aspect to it. It's just like he took a massive risk. He could have taken way more, I guess, and completely gone insane. Instead, he followed his instincts and he basically became like the Virgin Mary to one of the great psychedelics that ever, you know, made its way into the bloodstream of the human biome and really created radical transformations in society. And, you know, people point out that during this time, this was right around when they were splitting the atom. And it was like the antithesis of the nuclear bomb. It was as though like the nuclear bomb got this reflection in this incredible compound that instead of, you know, annihilating humans and buildings and incinerating people, had the ability to annihilate identity itself or what we thought we were. Yeah.
Oh, it's like a mind bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. It's yeah.
Isn't it weird that the father of all that is a scientist? The father of hippies and all that shit is a fucking science. That's, I mean, what a terrible match.
Yeah. Well, supposedly when people started taking it recreationally, he didn't understand why, because he had had such a fucked up trip that he was like, why in the name of God would anyone do this to themselves? It's like, you know, it was. But he,
Ryan O'Neill did that when I was trying to get him to take mushrooms a long time ago, 10 years ago or something. He was like, no, I took some in Amsterdam and I didn't like it. I was like, oh, what'd you take? He goes, 10 grams of dried mushrooms. I'm like,
Jesus.
What? That was your only experience with shrooms? Like, I was like drinking a bottle of tequila. It's like, I don't like alcohol.
Dude, exactly. That's the thing. So many people have overdosed on psychedelics. They think the psychedelic is bad when they've just taken like, it's a perfect example. It's like drinking a bottle of vodka and saying like vodka's poisonous, which it is. You don't drink a bottle, you know? Yeah. So it's a beautiful story. He wrote a book called My Problem Child. About LSD, and he's a really fascinating and clearly eccentric human who I think began to take it recreationally.
Really?
Yeah. Well, or whatever you want to call it. I hate that term, recreational. I hate it. It's so reductive, and like, it's like, it is, what isn't recreational, you know? But it makes this, I just hate the problem with the term recreational when it comes to, I called it a medicine, but I don't like that term either.
Yeah,
I don't
like the same hippie dip being like Native American.
Well, no, not that. It implies you need to be sick to take it. You know what I mean? This is the problem in our culture, is like we've broken shit up into medicinal or recreational. You know, I don't like any of the labels for psychedelics. I don't think we
would. I just want to smoke some weed. What do I got to call it something?
Yeah.
I just want to smoke some weed.
Yeah, it's a personal thing, but each one has its own kind of like, so if you say, I'm going to recreationally take a psychedelic, now attached to that is like, okay, now let me do some like psychedelic shit while I'm taking it, you know, or like go to a festival or whatever. Now all this stuff is attached to it. But then if you're like, I'm going to take it medicinally, now it's like, all right, I'm going to like go into myself, find my pain. And all of it is essentially attaching an agenda to a thing that I think is best entered into in the way you enter into a podcast, which is like, who the fuck knows what's going to happen?
It's expectations, and you got to lay off them. And those people who come into plans, I'm like, you're overthinking this. Just like, will it be the most spiritual thing? I'm like, maybe, but don't worry about that. You're going to have a good time. Just fucking, I don't know. Maybe your eighth time will be spiritual. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I like that. I think, you know, one version of it is you're treating the substance like it's a horse that you're going to ride around. The other version of it is you're turning the substance into some kind of doctor that's going to fix all your problems. And it's like that, you know, any encounter I've ever had with it, the less sanctimonious or the less important or the less severe I make it, or the less I want from it, the more it tends to like give me and
you're chasing something, you're not gonna find it.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine if you're like looking for silver, right? You're in the silver rush and you're going to look for it, and you're like, come across a fucking a mine, and you're like, oh sweet, and you looked and you go down there and you're like, what's it's gold, that's not what I want, and you keep looking for silver. It's like, oh dude, just look for stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, look for shiny rocks, you never know. They're all great. Yeah. And that being said, though, I do think like psychedelic therapy is like the data that's coming in from it is just showing that it really does help. It transforms people's lives. And so I'm not like, I hope I don't sound like I'm beating up on that, because I think that's like the breakthrough in modern day psychotherapy right now.
Yeah. But sure. Fine. It's like that, but that's not us. That's not how we're using
it. That's correct.
People I know that are using it are not that. So it's like, sure. Yeah.
But there's a lot of people fooling themselves into thinking they are. See, that's the thing, is like the, one of the cool, like right now there's different names for what we are in as far as psychedelics go. Some people are calling it a psychedelic renaissance. Some people that are calling it like the third wave of psychedelics or something like that.
I like to call it the Third Reich of psychedelics.
Well, you know what else happened on 8/420, unfortunately. It's Hitler's birthday, you know. But
he was a good kid.
Oh my God, Ari.
As an adult, he had problems. He could grow.
Why do you gotta Ari, please, children are listening to this. Ari. What's happening is, because the prohibition has ended and they're doing all these studies on ketamine and MDMA and just realizing what anyone knew all along, the shit seems to make you less depressed to some degree. Now what's springing up is this new hybrid psychologist shaman thing that has self-certified themselves and are like, you know, giving people insanely high doses of a variety of like super powerful psychedelics like MEO DMT, and they don't, there's no licensure for like a shaman.
This worked for me, so I don't know, try it.
I went to a ceremony in Peru twice. Now I'm going to come back to the United States and just start giving people who I have no idea their medical history. I have no idea if they're bipolar. I have no idea what's really going on with them. I'm just going to start giving them like poorly measured out doses of a drug no one understands.
Yeah.
And then strap in, because this is the problem right now. And this is one of the weird things happening in the world is, man, I know somebody who like was in like, I don't know, fucking San Bernardino or some shit, because some woman in an apartment is like giving people toad venom or MEO DMT, and he had a horrible time. And
Shane's always talking about that kind of shit, those kind of shamans, you know, live in the woods.
Yeah. And there's real shamans, but like there's this new version of it where people, it's like, yeah, it's just so, you know, I don't know, man. I think it's because I'm getting old.
I will say, as someone who has incorrectly dosed somebody, I would be like, there is shit. They're like, like Bert was later was like, dude, I have extreme anxiety. I'm like, yeah, I probably wouldn't have given that to you then. Should not be just
that, no, that was all
without telling you.
Who the fuck are
horrible
you?
Move.
You what you yeah, you
bad move.
What do you think? You're in the fucking 60s? What do you think? You're backstage of the Grateful Dead? Hired
yeah,
a
student. Like, it always worked for me. It's like, yeah, I'm not you. I'm like, yeah, good point.
That what you did was literally like, if Bert wanted to, you could go to jail for attempted murder, whatever. You're your own wild, deadly animal. I'm not going to scold you. You've gotten enough scolding.
I already self-scolded.
Okay, good. Whatever. But, you know, in the 60s, when this stuff was first showing up, you know, everyone's heard this story by now. They were dosing people at the fucking CIA because they thought it was funny. So they were putting acid in each other's coffee because they'd found...
Not the CIA? Other CIA people?
If you were the CIA... And you were like, as a joke, you might get a coffee and someone had put LSD in the coffee because nobody knew what it was and they thought it was funny. Now, think about that. Think about that trip. I mean, you know, it's a classic thing for people to be on a psychedelic and get scared that they're being monitored by the CIA. But how about
you're being actually watched?
You're in the CIA.
You see operatives stand at them extra hard because they are, because they know they dust you.
Yeah, man. Those were the days. But that was, you know, in another, someone I know, he ended up backstage at a Grateful Dead show. And he said that they just had acid in misters in spray bottles and they were just spraying it in the air. And so the air was just filled with like acid. You would just And that, you know, but that was back then. You know,
I heard a story of a comic who said he was getting driven across Bonnaroo
and somebody hit in a golf cart, and somebody hit the guy who's driving the golf cart with some spray. And he goes, fuck, I think that's acid.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing to do now that we know what acid is. And there's no point. It's like, it's got to be consensual, you know? I mean, again, yeah. I've become, when I was younger, I never ever dosed anybody. I never would dose anybody. Not just because of, like, ethically, it's fucking fuck, but also just like, my God, what are you going to do if they start freaking out? What are you going to do if they start losing their shit? That's like such a pain in the ass.
Acid to me would be the worst thing to dose somebody on. It's such a long trip and it's so fucking reality altering.
Yeah, man.
You're not even like connected anymore. I mean, I've coming out of acid trips and just like, I'm on a golf course. How did I get to this golf course? How am I at this golf course?
Oh my God.
It's a weird time where I'm like, what led up to this?
Dude, I have so here's a great story, if you don't mind. This is, so back in the 60s, this group of people emerged. They still exist to this day. Unfortunately, I've never met one of them as far as I know. It's called the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
So they believed that, and still do, I think, to this day, that LSD was the answer to all the great problems of the world, and that their motive, it was a religion essentially, was to get as much LSD as possible to as many people as possible in an attempt to create a global utopia. So this was
I can see how they would get there. I could see that after taking some, would be like, oh, if everyone took this, it'd be peaceful. I could see how they get to that.
They were dropping it out of planes onto beaches with kids down there. That's what they were doing. So, like, this is the fucking 60s, man. I mean, you know, and I don't know how much of this is hearsay. This is just stories that I've heard. But one story that is not hearsay is one of my friends from the Ram Dass community, who's like an old hippie. He was in India and, you know, they were hanging out in some who knows where up in the Himalayas. And somebody came down to the little hut or house they were staying at, and they're like, oh, the Brotherhood's here. The Brotherhood is here, which is, I guess, basically like saying like an ice cream truck for LSD is there. You know? So they're like, fuck, okay, go get the acid, get the acid. So like, and they would not sell it. They were giving it away. They were giving it away.
Oh, so much better than the parking lot at a Fish concert.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, you were getting LSD from people who were like thinking they were like putting you in contact with Jesus. But he said that this LSD he took was so powerful, just like what you were saying in Mandy. He said he took it and it was like he had teleported and was up to his waist in like a mountain creek, like under a waterfall. And he had no idea how he got there. 5 hours had passed. He had no idea what had happened. He was just suddenly under a waterfall. Wow. You know, I know, man. Yeah, that's the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. Yeah, they're still out there.
Remember that Joan Didion story, right?
No.
That's crazy. This Joan did when she went to like, this is when journalism was like journalism. And she went undercover at a hippie commune in NorCal somewhere and lived with them for a while. Because everyone's like, free love, it's amazing. And then she saw the lasting image where she saw some young child, like a 3 or 4 or 5 year old, something like that, just on drugs by themselves.
There you go.
And she's like, this isn't fucking beautiful and amazing. This is just like child endangerment.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly, man. This is like, you know, my wife and I now, we have strict rules about this shit, man. We have a baby, so we can't have anything around the house.
Because you can't get into it.
Exactly. Yeah, man. No fucking way. It's not worth it. It's like, you got to be, you have to be like, as a parent, the child has to become the psychedelic. You know, like you can't, in the old days, this is what people were doing. They were getting blasted on fucking drugs, you know, giving their kids all this stuff. We know better now, you know? So like,
I know parents that are like, not hippie parents, but like with hippie tendencies, you know, and they'll take like a cap and be around their kids.
I've heard these stories myself, man, but it's like, for me,
I mean, yeah, everyone's got to be their own parent, I guess.
Everybody's got to do their own parenting, and it's like, there's plenty of time, not now, because of this motherfucking pandemic, but, you know, in the old days, we would just go to, like, if we wanted to do this, which You know, I don't do it as much as I used to. And I used to do it every day when I was growing up. You know, this was like as much as you could take acid, you would take it. When I was a wee lad, when I was in college, or you know what I mean, when I was in high school kids don't do this. They found out, wait till your brain doesn't stop developing until you're like 24, 25. I'm not advocating for kids to do this, and I mean it. Don't do it. We didn't have the data back then because of the prohibition. We didn't know that there could be a real impact on your brain if you were taking it when you were a teenager. I didn't know that. We just assumed it was making us retarded, but we didn't have the data to prove it. Now we know. Don't do it. Just wait. Just do it when you're older. I sound like such a fucking
Wait. What, I think I know where you're going, but like when you say because of the prohibition, we didn't have the data. What does that mean?
It means that so Nixon hated the hippies, hated the Black Power movement, and he wanted to shut them down. So you can't arrest people for having ideologies in the United States because of freedom of speech. So you have to invent a thing that you can arrest them for, right? Which was weed, drugs, acid. And this began the war on drugs. But really what it did is it opened up a way for the state to arrest people who they consider to be counterculture. And so welcome to the prohibition. It wasn't just that you couldn't take it. It was that you couldn't study it anymore. And so we didn't know, we lost decades of potential data. All we have is anecdotal evidence and some shitty
acting for themselves. Like, I think it does this to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we know a little bit more about it. And I'm not sitting here reading fucking scientific journals. I just happen to be friends with people who are psychiatrists who do psychedelic therapy. And they give me the data that's out there. And the bottom line is, the human brain is not finished developing when you're a teenager. And so the idea is like, at least wait till you're in college to start taking powerful psychedelics. If you're a kid and you have taken a psychedelic, don't worry. You're not going to go crazy. Everything's okay. But just put it off for a little bit longer. That being said, when I was growing up, I didn't know that we were the problem that you would run into with LSD in particular was, you know, you would have to take double the dose the next day if you wanted to get high.
Oh, that's right. The next day. It really was. Like, it wouldn't hit you anymore.
Right. It was expensive.
Like you built up antibodies or something. You got to wait a few weeks.
That's exactly right. And that was frustrating. Not a few weeks. It was, you could do every other day.
Yeah. I mean, they told me on mushrooms, it was, you have to wait a month. But then I found out later, like a week later, it's still going to hit you pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did you first take acid? Like, or what was the first psychedelic you took? Was it acid?
It was LSD, yeah.
When? What? How old were you? You were in North Carolina, I assume.
I was in the 10th grade. Yeah.
Wow. Who gave it to you?
Well, it was one of my dear friends. I mean, like, I remember when acid hit Hendersonville, North Carolina. It was in the 9th grade that I had heard some of my friends were taking it, and they were like describing. I remember one of my friends like drew a picture of a piano on. Yeah. A sheet of paper and showed me the piano and then like rolled the sheet of paper. You know what I mean? Like, so that the picture of the piano was kind of like doing that breathing thing that you see when you're on acid. You know, he's like, it's kind of like that, man. It's like a pretty good attempt. We didn't have CGI back then. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's pretty cool. So, I was excited about it and wanted to try it, but couldn't find any. And then finally, when I was in the 10th grade, some of my friends, in my friend's trailer, they gave me a hit of White Blotter. It was, I don't know, probably a 80 microgram dose, a pretty good dose of it. I just remember,
nothing crazy.
I mean, it was like we were there. I remember sitting, like, my friend's trailer had one of those, I don't know what you call it. Like, sometimes you'll get a hotel room that they're trying to make seem fancy, and they've put one of those shitty jacuzzi tubs in the middle of the hotel room. It sucks.
It's so weird.
The hotel.
Like, yeah, people have used this in a weird.
They fucked in it. They fucked. Yeah, that's a fuck tub. And I don't want it next to my bed. I don't want to be next to a bathtub. I don't want to climb out
water.
So gross. But they had one of these jacuzzi tubs that was empty, and I'd taken the dose and I was sitting there. They were watching Star Wars or The Empire Strikes Back. I can't remember which one. And I remember the sound became echoey, and weird and reverby. And I was thinking like, whoa, the speaker, there's the speaker of the TV must be. And then I'm like, oh, this is it. And then I went out and laid in the grass and was laughing and they were jumping over me and laughing because they knew this was the first time I was tripping. I'll tear up thinking about it. It was one of the most beautiful experiences I ever had. I like was sitting in my friend's shitty high school car, looking up at the ceiling of the car and seeing like hieroglyphics in it and just thinking to myself, this is the most profoundly, you know, beautiful healing experience I've ever had in my life. And that was the beginning of it. And, you know, ever since then,
isn't that first time so fucking amazing and weird? And the laughter, I try to explain to people, the laughter on any psychedelic is like, it's a gut-wrenching laughter.
Yeah, man.
Of like, it's like...
it's freedom.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's no...
open up.
You have been... yeah. What? No, I'm sorry to cut you off, man. Open up. That's exactly it.
Yeah. We were, me and Benji and someone, I don't know if I can say who they took and stuff, but like we're all at Benji's grandmother's place and we saw Gustav Klimt's his painting where this guy is like holding a woman like this and he's kind of eating her, but you don't know if he's kissing her or whatever. It's like a famous Renaissance painting.
Yeah.
And we were just looking at it and it's just the laughter that comes. We drink some water, just spit it out just from looking at a fucking classical painting. It's unmatched.
Yeah,
it's an unmatched level of laughter.
Yeah,
to a comedian, by the way, who lives in laughter. I've never experienced like fucking drugs.
The only laughter that I know of that I've ever heard of that reminds me of it is my child's laughter. It's the same kind of laughter. And it's like free laughter. There's no, an adult, we're worried. We're wearing this heavy costume that is our body and all of our identity and all of our sorrows, regrets, desires, things we wish we hadn't done or things we wish we had done. It's a heavy, by the time you get to be our age, man, you're carrying some weight. And I don't just mean like fat. I mean, like you're probably carrying a little bit of weight. And that's a lot. For a human. And so a psychedelic can do what therapy does in just a second where for a moment, all that weight's gone. You're not buying into your story anymore. The story has ended for a second. The movie you were in, which was all the phenomena in your life that you connect to as being the defining moments of who you are for a second are gone. And that is where you have the ability to laugh like a toddler because you're not wearing that musty ass fucking old snakeskin of your identity. And that's really for a lot of people, that's all they need to start over. You know, that's it. Just 1 second. It's like a furry. You've been in a fucking furry costume that looks like you at a furry convention that's been going on for 40 years, 30 years, 20 years. And for a second, that fucking stinky, musty thing has been taken off of you and you get to identify. Just once in a lifetime, that's enough. That can be enough. Just once.
The feeling afterwards, after a good trip, it's like, for me anyway, and I want you to describe it, it's tiring. It wears you out. I don't know if that's because I've been walking around for fucking 12 hours. You know, that's part of it. But mentally, it's also tiring. But also, it's just like, the world is new and kind of like the feeling of I can do anything and everything's going to be chill and okay. Like, it's just this refresher. Like, all right, it's like a weekend for your brain. And then you get to go back in and be like, I've had a nice vacation. Now I can handle this.
Great way to put it. It's a great way to put it. It's like a combination of like going to the gym, going to a steam room, going to the spa, running a marathon, going through some like terrifying thing that like you got through alive. The end of a tour, you know, like the end of a great tour where you've been doing stand up and you get home and you've got that exhausted yet warm feeling. You know, it's healing.
Done something, yeah.
It's the feeling of being healed. It's the feeling of being having, you know, I don't want to say it's like getting sick because it isn't, but you know, when you've been sick for a while and the sickness is gone and all the purgative effects of having a fever have cleansed you, it's this feeling of lightness and colors are brighter. You feel more connected to nature. Dude, yeah.
What is it with like the greens of grass? The next day, even the next week, almost are so green. It's like it's lasting. It's like a lasting color enhancer.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot of research out there showing this is why people are into microdoses of LSD, because they're finding that there's neurogenesis. You're literally growing new connections in your brain. Your brain is making new connections. It's becoming something. It's refreshed and new. And maybe that's why you're exhausted too, is because that's an exhausting thing. I don't know. But certainly that is one of the interesting qualities of a great psychedelic experience, is that for a little while, colors are brighter and the world is brand new.
Yeah. Do you get, when you smoke a J, let's say like sometimes I do, like 10 days later, it like kind of like kicks up like the last 10% of a fucking mushroom or acid trip. It like kind of like kicks it back in again for like an hour.
Oh yeah, man. Absolutely. I can, you know, I think because I've just done it so much.
Yeah.
I can be around someone who is tripping, yeah, and I'll start tripping. Like I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. It could be placebo. I don't know what it is, but I can instantly catch a contact eye from a thing that you shouldn't be able to get a contact eye from, for if someone's tripping. I don't know what that is. I love it though. I'm happy to call it the placebo effect, by the way. I don't give a shit. You know, it's like, this is the other thing that I love about being friends with people who are in psychedelic research and psychedelic therapy. And man, let me just say this. Sorry. I'm sorry. I just feel like I have to say this.
Yeah, go for it.
I am a psychedelic advocate. I will always be, but I think that they should be regulated. And anybody listening to this who hasn't taken a psychedelic and is now thinking, I want to take a psychedelic, please, if you're under 21, if you're a kid, just wait. If you're a manic depressive, if you have any...
Sure, yeah. Any schizophrenia in your family.
Please.
Don't.
It's like giving yourself surgery. Like, I got lucky. I just got lucky. I got lucky. I could have, like, ended up in a... Who knows what could have happened? I could have been in a car accident. And these days, you can find psychedelic therapists who are the real deal. Well, any ketamine clinic. By the way, you have to be careful. There's one on Larchmont that my friend Dr. Cole Marta facilitates. And, you know, you could go to MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies online. You can find these places to go to.
Find MAPS would have a, like, in your local town?
I imagine they must, yeah. And also you could go to... probably Arrowhead.com probably has some connections. What I'm saying is, you need you should have a therapist who is up to date on this stuff enough where you could sit with them and tell them you want to do this, and they should be able to advise you whether or not it's time, or help you with it, or get you ready for it, or whatever. What I'm saying is, this is profoundly powerful stuff out there that I just don't want anybody to get hurt. That's the main thing, man. This is what I've turned into. I'm sorry. And being friends with these people in the psychedelic community who have been busting their fucking ass to get MDMA prescribable, to get potentially psilocybin prescribable. I just don't want to fuck up their work by somebody losing their shit. Because for every...
I know what you're saying, but yeah, I get it. It's just
be careful, kids.
Be careful. I'd say that. I definitely tell everybody, if you have any sort of history of schizophrenia in your family, do not. But
hold on one second. That's not okay. The studies on that, actually, it's no. From what I've read, and I could be wrong about this, they did, I can't remember the type of the study where you gather data that's already out there and assemble it. One of the This is actually one of the other great things about being friends with these fucking scientists, is all the urban myths about if you have, it'll cause schizophrenia, it could trigger schizophrenia, if there's schizophrenia in your family, that kind of stuff, it might not be completely true. The main thing is, this is do the research yourself. If you have schizophrenia in your family and you're worried about taking a psychedelic, you should go to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and sit down with them and find out. They should know, if they're a good doctor, what is the cutting edge of data, and advise you. You know, that's the main thing. Here's I'm going to stop doing this stupid lecture shit. Here's the last little piece of it. I want psychedelics to be available to forever, for all future generations. I want them to be deregulated or to be regulated. I want them to be safely dispensed. I want the supply chain to be safe. And there's people who are on the front lines of reversing the horrific damage the war on drugs has caused to our ability to obtain good drugs. And I don't want to fuck up their work in any way, shape, or form. That's all. Just guys, please don't lose your shit. If you can keep it together a little bit longer, you'll be able to go and get a nice prescription for psilocybin, for potentially one day LSD that you don't have to worry has some fucking hippies jizz or broken fucking crystal shards of meth in it or some shit. You know, just give it some time, friends. That's all. And then we can just take it easy. We want this to no longer go into the shadows. That's all. That's why I'm being so preachy about it. Forgive me. You know, and for me to be saying this now, a younger version of me would be rolling his eyes so fucking hard it would look like I had a demon inside of me. So I get it.
Because, you know, a general rule is like, hey, I'm in a tent at Bonnaroo, and everybody's like, hey, we're all taking acid. You want some? It's always a tough time to say, no, I got to do some research first. Like a therapist.
I know. Listen, I just feel like I have to say that.
I get it. You're right. Know. It would be nice if it's legal. I mean, imagine if right before a marijuana vote came in, like, you know, however many years ago, like, should we legalize this? Somebody smokes a joint that gets up on a roof and fucking tries to fly off. Like, oh, you just fucked it up for all of us.
Exactly. That's it, man. That's what I'm saying. It's like, we've just got to, like, all we have to do is, like, just let it go a little bit longer. And before you know it, we're going to have, because the main thing is the supply chain is fucked right now, man. This is the problem. It's like, we've got, so, like, because of fentanyl contamination.
Fentanyl, yeah. Everything.
Everything. Everything.
What the fuck is fentanyl? If it's so deadly, why are they cutting things with it?
Well, that's the thing. What's happening is, okay, I think Jim Gaffigan has got a funny joke about it, but I can't remember how it goes. Something about you
Jim
go
Gaffigan look. Is a joke about fentanyl?
No. He's got a joke about the pharmacies. When you go to the pharmacy, you're looking at this dude like taking forever to pour pills into a bottle. And you're looking and he's all in fucking like medical garb and it seems so sanitary and like ridiculous. You're like, just what are you fucking doing, man? Give me my goddamn penicillin. They're being so careful. And the reason they're being careful is because if they accidentally put the wrong drug in the bottle, somebody dies. So they have to be careful. So if you think.
Did you see The Simpsons last night? It's like, oh, it was great. I love The Simpsons. It's so funny. Like, oh, no.
That if you think that the person, depending on where your ketamine or cocaine or whatever white powder drug you're doing is coming from, if you have a fantasy that somewhere in that supply chain, there's a dude acting like a pharmacist and not sitting there with like potentially some fentanyl because they're trying to like cut their whatever with fucking fentanyl. And they've got some fucking ketamine or cocaine they're selling. And then the air conditioner comes on and a nice like draft happens. If just a few grains of that fentanyl drift into the ketamine or into the cocaine, it doesn't even matter if you have a testing kit that you're testing the cocaine with because Yeah, it's called the chocolate chip cookie effect. So that means that
if you break off a piece of chocolate chip cookie, it won't have any chocolate chips in it.
If you get one little grain of it in anything, then you can die. And so this is the problem, and this is 100% related to the goddamn prohibition. Because if the shit was regulated, prescribable, however you want to put it, whatever method you want to use to make sure that people have access to it in a safe way, like we do alcohol, then we wouldn't ever have to worry about our, you know, kids dying at risk.
Pick up some Cid at a fucking CVS.
Wait, exactly. That's the future I long for.
Yeah, that would be nice. Wait, why do they even have fentanyl? Like, is fentanyl a drug people do pure? Like, pure fentanyl?
I think it's...
Who wants fentanyl?
Heroin addicts, I believe. Opioid addicts.
If 1 gram kills
you... Opioid addicts.
How are they... Are they just doing only fentanyl?
I don't fucking know, man. I never got into that side of things, man. I never really got too into that.
Baffles me. Like, where's this fentanyl? Who's it for?
Well, that's the creepy thing about it, man. It's like, that's one of the scary things people talk about is like, is it that, you know, fentanyl dust is getting into the like supply chain, or is it that people are intentionally putting it in different drugs to try to kill people? I mean, are they trying to poison people who want to take substances out of some horrific, you know, attempt to like slow down the progress of the human right to expand consciousness feel varying states of ecstasy? Who the fuck knows, man? But the point is, it's out there. And the reason it's out there is directly because we have archaic drug laws. And so because of that, we all have to worry about dying anytime we decide to do like a line of cocaine or Freud was doing, you know, or a little bit of ketamine or whatever. So yeah, it sucks, man. It's a bad time. It's sad.
I was at a festival and some woman comes out of the bathroom, and our camp area was like right there. And she goes, "Do you guys have any cocaine? Just a stranger, you know?" And we're all like, "No." And she goes, "How about ketamine?" And we're like, "Well, first of all, what opposite trips are you looking for right now?
Oh my God.
Not cocaine or meth. Like, keep it in the same category."
She just, yeah, it is literally like the polar opposite. That's so fucking weird. That's like, "Do you have any Valium? No? How about some coffee? Do you got any coffee?
Can I run a marathon? No? How about I sleep for 2 days then?"
Yeah. What the fuck? Man, the horror stories you hear about people who make the dreadful mistake of finding a bag of white powder on the ground and being so stupid as to like snort it because they think they found blow, and then they have found ketamine, and so they do like their cocaine level amount for ketamine, and then just are suddenly just in a fucking ketamine paralysis. Yeah. Frozen in time.
People want it so bad. The fiends. We were at another festival. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, that's where people do stuff a lot. But and we found on the ground a baggie. And my friend, who's from, you know, England, who's like the pro, you know, English people, do crazy amounts of pills and Mandy and all that shit. And he was like, "Maybe I'll try it." But like, "But dude, we have enough drugs for this whole festival."
Yeah.
Goes, "Yeah, but maybe I'll try it." I'm like,
roll the dice.
Why though?
Yeah.
If we're starving, you take some food off the ground. If you're in a restaurant, leave it on the ground.
Dude, it's the same conversation rats probably have when they find poison. You know, they're like, "That kind of looks like bread. Let's just give it a shot." You know,
I'll eat it at the same time and test it.
I saw that documentary on rats. I don't know if you've seen that, but apparently the rats have gotten so good at knowing that like shit like that is probably poison that they send the weak rats in to eat it.
Wow.
Like to test. Yeah, they've got like bullied rats that they send to eat the poison, and then they wait to see.
That's what I do with acid. I'm like, "I got some acid. I don't know if I trust it."
Sorry.
If you want to take it, sure. You can have one. You let me know. But I'm telling you where I got it. I don't trust this. And they're like, "All right, I'm willing to take the chance."
Oh my God. This is the problem. Do you remember? Go ahead.
I mean, that's the culture.
That's the world.
That's the fucking culture of it.
It's the world we're in right now.
Do you remember when you got to LA when we were working for Mitzi, or I was kind of working for you, but like we were both working for Mitzi, and and I remember you going early on, because I guess you had just gotten to LA pretty recently, and you were like, "Where can we get some acid?" And I was like, "What?" I hadn't taken it yet before ever. I was like, "What?" You're like, "Yeah, I can't find any acid. We were doing ecstasy. Ecstasy was in plenty back then in LA, and weed obviously, but like you were like, "That's just this whole city's fucking dry on acid."
Yeah.
Isn't it weird how like that kind of drug, a place just runs out, a region just doesn't have it, and then is flush with it, and then just doesn't have it again.
I know, man. I remember that. My theory on that, by the way, is just like I was being lazy. Like, you know, it's like, what are you going to ask for acid at a comedy club? In those days, that's not necessarily like the right place to like ask for acid anyway. You know, there was, I don't know what happened, man, but there was definitely a period where the LSD was more difficult to obtain. And there's a lot of reasons that you can look up behind that. Difficult to obtain depending on what social circles you are in. You know, fortunately, you know, in California, they decriminalized drugs, you know. So if you have look it up. It's the,
you know. What do you mean?
Yeah, I'll look it up right now. It's the kind of thing that they just slid under the... California's fucking awesome, man. I really love it.
Decriminalized drugs?
Yeah, listen.
California's did some great stuff. They were the first ones to say no smoking inside. I'm like, why? People want to. I'm like, yeah, the waitresses don't want to. And you can't fucking make them be in fucking smoke two packs a day of secondhand smoke. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, let me just make sure I'm right about this. It's a before you put it out there and people get arrested and shit. But essentially,
smoking meth in front of a cop station, I'm like, nah, you guys can't touch me, Duncan said.
Yeah, well, it's actually sort of like in a here's an article by a right wing thing bitching about it. Let me find it here. In 2014, California voters approved Proposition 47, which dramatically reduced penalties for many criminal offenses. Co-writer by Gascon, Prop 47 reduced small quantity drug possession and use to a misdemeanor. Whoa. So, yeah. So what that means is if you're not selling it, you know.
So if I catch you with like two hits of acid between your credit cards, they'd be like, misdemeanor.
I think it depends on if I think LSD because it's there's a wonderful lawyer named Bruce Margolis who let me make sure that's his
story
name.
Story checks out.
He's a Jewish name. He's wonderful, and he's a make sure this is I'm getting his name right in case anybody gets in trouble out there. It's Bruce Margolin, not Margolis. This wonderful human has, you know, is a marijuana attorney, and he's like, I think he has his own app that you use if you get busted with weed that has, you turn it on immediately, it tells you what to do, starts recording the whatever the police are saying to you so that like you have a record of what the arrest was like. And the way he explained it to me is basically, yeah, it's legal here and, you know, yeah, maybe drugs are decriminalized here or whatever, but on a federal level, they're not. And so it's all up in the air. I think he said it's a little bit like gazelle and lions. You know, usually the gazelle are going to get away, but one's going to get eaten and you never know. It's like the main thing is like, don't ride dirty, you know, be safe.
Well, that's what all the dispensaries
roll dirty. Like, what they call? Yeah.
I don't, it's not,
I can't, name. I don't know. Let's what see. It is.
Riding dirty.
Who gives a fuck?
But that's what all the dispensaries said, where they were like, no, it's legal here. And then they every once in a while, the feds would be like, nah, we're just going to shut you down and arrest all of you. And even if we let you out, we're taking away your whole livelihood. We're never going to return all your assets.
We're just going to take everything.
Oh, and you're like, yeah, it's not federally illegal. Locally legal is not the same as legal.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to, we're going to burn your marijuana in an incinerator.
Can you imagine having a clothing store and saying, oh, we need to confiscate all these clothes in here to find out they're legal? And then it's like, okay, it's all legal. I'm like, can I get my whole inventory back? And they're like, no.
No.
And you're like, but that's, I have. If you don't get that back. And they're like, yep, sorry.
Yeah, man, it's a bummer. It's a fucking bummer for sure. Yeah. And it's a bummer to be, listen, I know, you know, at one point when I was in New York, I was having this conversation via email with this police officer who got busted for smoking a joiner. There's a whole group of police officers who are for the legalization of marijuana on the federal level. Cause they're fucking, you know, there's a lot of cops out there who like legitimately just wanted to help. They, you know what I mean? They're not like authoritarian monsters. Their idea was, right, I'm going to be the person who comes to your fucking house when you're like, and with a gun to risk dying for you, who I don't know at all, because you're being like home invaded or whatever. There's a lot of people like that out there. The last thing they want is to risk their fucking life.
Arrest somebody for weed.
What? They know it doesn't do anything, and they get it. They, you know, who knows? You go to the wrong car that smells like weed. The guy's got a gun. You don't go home to your fucking kids because some harmless fucking substance. Fuck that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of police officers who are like, they know that.
I can see that.
With
can
meth.
We do better things with our time? Fuck this.
Why are we risking our lives to fucking arrest people for a plant? Like, I get, like, you know, there's certain drugs I understand being illegal, you know, like meth. Meth, for example. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of great stories about how, I, as far as I'm aware, I've never heard of meth therapy. You know, I never hear a story of like, well, I did meth and my trauma, the trauma I experienced from abuse when I was a kid, I figured out a new way to look at it and I forgave my parents. No, I don't know that many meth stories like that, you know, but certain substances I get, but I don't think cops necessarily want to enforce marijuana laws, you know? Anyway, the point, it's like, and couch, all you, and that's another thing. If you're someone who takes psychedelics, you should be aware of the drug laws where you live. You should know what they are. Don't be some dum-dum and not be aware of the risk-to-reward ratio wherever you happen to be. Don't gamble. What are you doing? Know what's up. Know what's going on. And know, have a lawyer, you know, that you can contact if you are someone who's putting yourself at risk in that way. God, I sound like a fucking prude.
Yeah, you do. It's crazy. It's so interesting.
That's what happens when you have a fucking kid, man. I had a kid. I'm a dad now. Now I know the love that you feel for your kids. These are, you know, I don't want someone's kid to get in trouble. What happened to me? What happened to me, Ari?
All these hippies are like, what? Get out of here, dude. We're in a commune. Who the fuck is that? What happened to Doo-Doo Duncan?
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I just want y'all. I'm not trying to make you paranoid, man. I just want people to, like, I want to go to CVS and be able to get LSD when my son.
That would be real nice. That would be
when my
nice.
Son is old enough, when he's in his 20s, I want him to be able to do that and have a safe trip. I just don't want any of us having to worry about some freak with a fucking gun.
Dude, this fentanyl thing is like bothersome to all these drug addicts, drug users, drug enthusiasts.
Whatever it's
like,
you want to call it.
You're really fucking this thing up. The idea that it's like, damn it, I knew what drug I want to take and I can handle it. And now it's like, but it might be some other thing suddenly.
Yeah.
They said that's what killed Tom Petty.
Well,
he said he was having back problems and he was like, I fucking wrote
Tom
that.
Petty
go,
died?
Go get me some fucking something for my back. Go
Tom
to
Petty died?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Duncan. But yeah.
What the fuck?
It was about
four or five
years ago.
What?
Yeah, sorry. He was a great one.
Googling. I'm sorry. I'm going being a hypocrite now. I'm Googling. What the fuck?
Yeah, he was a great one.
Yeah. Wow.
You remember it now?
I kind of remember it. I honestly, it's like I was just listening to one of his songs and I thought he was still alive.
Oh no, they still exist. The cool thing about the death is that songs don't get purged.
That would be amazing.
Dude, yeah, Bill Withers died, and I didn't think of it until later. People are like, oh, I can't believe it's so sad. And I wanted to be like, hey, how many of you guys knew Bill Withers was still alive?
Dude, that would be so fucking crazy if ever their songs vanished with him.
Like, what happened to all Tom? How come I haven't talked Penny in a while? I haven't heard
of him. Like,
oh yeah, he died. Got taken off.
Fuck, man, that's so crazy. Yeah, fentanyl, man, fuck that shit. Fuck. But you know, by the time you get to the point, you know, when you're shooting up, man,
well, that's just, yeah, but shooting up, sure, but when you're like, we're all gonna dance at some fucking,
yeah, we just wanted to dance, you know what,
and then you gotta fucking deal with it.
Hold on, let me look this up. You can go to dancesafe.org. I think dancesafe.org. They sell, that's a great place that you can go to see what's going on. It's I've interviewed, you should have this guy on. His name's Emmanuel Seferius. He's brilliant.
Sounds like an evil genius. Emmanuel Seferius. Damn.
Yeah,
that's
like
a Bond villain.
He's wonderful. And he's like, this is the organization that at one point was, they were letting them test drugs at raves. And
dude.
Then, yeah,
they were doing it in Australia. They were like, they would, so in Australia, okay, so they got a glass problem, that's what they call it, and one of the fucking congresswomen there, that their level of that, was like, oh yeah, my son is fucking a huge addict and died or whatever. So now they, like, at festivals they were testing it. They were like, we're not going to arrest you, we're going to send you a text. As soon as we get through with your test, they chip off a tiny piece and they'll tell you what's in it.
Exactly. And it'll be
like 75% this, 25% that, and they're like, fentanyl, it'll be like, blah, 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 do not take, throw away, you know?
Yep.
And so then we were trying to do that everywhere, and people are like, nah, that's going to encourage drug use, which is like, it will, I guess, but it'll also
let
you throw away some evil shit.
This is the truly the satanic aspect of the prohibition, is these idiots. It's basically the way Seferius put it, is making drugs illegal is the same thing as making them deregulated. It means that no one's monitoring it. Right. No one's legalization is the only answer if you want to keep your kids safe. Because if you fucking think that making anything illegal is keeping your kids from doing it, then where the fuck are you? Like, that, this does, it's like you're insane.
I just remember I've quoted a bunch of times some Fox News analyst. Oh, LSD testing kit.
That's dansafe.org. They sell it.
I've had this. They sponsor Skankfest.
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah, so that's, yeah, exactly. This is but with, you know, with the cocaine testing kit and the MDMA testing kit.
Whoa, that's great.
Isn't it great? And you have to, like, apparently you have to test it. And he was telling me, I think, every time because of the fentanyl thing. Like,
every single pill.
Yeah, I think they might actually have a fentanyl testing kit. I don't know. Let me check it. Oh, yeah, they do. Here it is. Fentanyl test strips. So let's see. Yes, they detect the presence of fentanyl. This could potentially save your life. If you're somebody who uses white powders, this is definitely
out. See that one? You showed me this one. I don't know if you got up on the screen. You fucking master this program.
I know, man. I love this. It's called Wirecast. It's this. By the way, I have no commercial affiliation with Dance Safe or anything like that.
Yeah, me neither. But fucking free ad. I would definitely say take this over not testing any at all.
Here, check it out. Yeah, those are fentanyl test strips. Yes. Yeah, so that can save your life. And if you're somebody who's like eaten up with paranoia about this shit, then just order them. I don't think I don't know how much they cost, but it's how much is, you know, how much is, yeah, no shit. Yeah. God damn it.
They always say that, but they're like, yeah, but I'm not spending fucking 80 extra bucks every time I go to a party.
Well, wait, what is Doug Stanhope's joke? Some things are just better than life.
His suicide joke is one of my favorites. He goes, I don't know, I feel like suicide is kind of like a movie. If it's shitty two-thirds of the way through, chances are it's not gonna get really awesome right at the end.
Oh god, it's so dumb. He's wrong. That's wrong, Doug. I don't believe that at all. That's not true. At any moment a human can have an epiphany and completely realign themselves, for sure. When that's way better than suicide. Also, you know what else, man? The problem with fucking suicide is you're banking on oblivion. You're rolling the dice on your human body is all there is. You're a neurological machine, a biological machine. And once this fucking thing stops, you stop. And I think that is a roll of the dice. You don't know for sure what's going to happen. You don't know that you don't know. So, committing suicide.
Either way, it's a pretty good joke.
It's okay. It's a great.
I wouldn't examine the fucking.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's one of my favorite jokes. I'm not decrying the joke.
Pops.
It's fuck you. Technically, it's a perfect joke. Philosophically, I disagree. But yeah, I quote that joke all the time. It's brilliant. Stanhope's the best.
Yeah, I think he did that. I think everybody's seen him do it together at the Comedy Store right when we started. I think that's when he was doing that, like 2001-ish.
Yeah, we did see. I remember that night. That's how good that joke is. I remember that night. I remember the feeling in the room when he told that joke. I remember the awe in my heart and just the sense of like, oh, wow, that is like, oh my God, that is.
Yeah, when you're like, we didn't know how to write jokes. We're like, what the? That was so great. It gave his point across and it was funny and it's comparison. It was like, wow.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the great jokes. I just philosophically disagree with it, but God damn, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually saw him watching Holtzman in what I think was one of my top 3, 4, 5 sets ever, is the first set after 9/11. And Stanhope saying, turning around to me and saying, I disagree with 90% of this, but fuck, this is funny.
Yeah, man.
To where it's like, I don't have to agree with it. I can still appreciate the fucking technical aspects of this joke writing.
God, I mean, if you want to, that's the whole problem. That's like you really are robbing yourself of a good time if you feel like you got to agree with the subject matter when it comes to, you know, pretty much anything. It's like, I don't agree that they should have injected Snake Plissken with that thing in his neck so that his arteries explode if he doesn't save the fucking president. I think that's a completely unethical thing to do.
Imagine. I love comparing the way they shit on comedy to other things. Like, imagine, like, oh, so you're saying it's because you like that movie, you're saying it's okay for the government to take, and you're like, what?
Yeah. I don't think they should have turned Manhattan into a jail. I think that's a bad idea. I think prisoners' rights. I'm pro prisoners' rights. I don't think letting them live. But a great fucking movie. Great movie. You know.
Yeah, dude. What was I gonna tell you? Do you remember something like your best? Oh wait, did you ever have bad trips? Besides the story you told on my show, on my storytelling show, doesn't that happen?
Oh, God. One out of three trips were horrible. I would have horrible trips all the time. Yeah, all the time.
Well, how great were the good trips that got you going back?
Well, the bad trips were great, too. I mean, there's a saying, the bad
trips. Okay, please explain that, because this is what no one understands. Go ahead.
Bad trips are the best trips.
What?
Well, because first, like, so people start having a bad trip. Usually the bad trip for me would involve, oh, fuck, I'm dying.
Okay.
Because I was afraid to die. I was afraid of death. And I had a lot of fucking weird trauma from growing up and that I hadn't dealt with. That I wasn't even aware of. I just didn't even. So it was like all this shit. I should have been going. I mean, I was a kid. So usually what would happen is in some way or another, I would start thinking I was dying and I was afraid to die. And so because I was afraid to die, I would start resisting the death process that was happening from the psychedelic. The death process was my identity beginning to dissolve or whatever, you know, it was the dissolution of my identity. But I would begin to feel guilty or plagued with regret or worried about my mom. I'd feel like a piece of shit because I was on drugs or all these various things would come up that were really quite painful. And, you know, if I'd had a therapist at the time, it would have been amazing to work with that stuff. So those were the bad trips, you know. It was just like having like a, the psychedelic, I believe, is generally pointing at something inside of you that needs addressing. It needs to be confronted or dealt with or looked at or in a compassionate way, not beating yourself up for it. And so if all of a sudden the psychedelic is like opened up your heart and you're witnessing some thing that happened to you, which happens to a lot of people. They remember shit from their childhood that they forgot, or they might be with someone and see something in them that they didn't want to see, you know, they might look around at their life and just think, man, this is not who I wanted to be. Or, you know, might become suddenly aware of how messy their house is, how unhealthy they are. Why am I smoking? How many times have you been tripping and you take inhale a cigarette and you're like, what am I doing to myself? Why am I hurting my body? What am I doing? And then you feel guilty and then that creates a chain reaction. So in those days, yeah, spiral, man. And so in those days, I didn't have any ability to deal with that shit. You know, I think I spent most of my high school years like probably clinically depressed, I would say. I just didn't know it. Or I just thought it was normal to feel the way I felt. So those were the bad trips. But I think some part of me knew that there was also a catharsis happening, whatever you want to call it, a kind of freedom, a kind of, for a second, a way to like get my head above the, you know, dynamics of my family and my past, you know, and that was worth all of it, you know?
Yeah, I compare it sometimes kind of like to working out, like lifting weights, which, you know, I'm the last one to talk about that. But like, it sucks lifting weights. Like, it hurts.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to like trying to push up the last one and it's like, and you got to do another rep and it's like, this hurt. But like, but you're going to come out of it with a better, healthier body.
Yeah.
It's just,
man,
like I'd rather just lie on the couch. It's way less painful. But then, yeah, in the long run, it's way more painful to lie on the couch.
That's it. Exactly. It's just, you got to deal with it. Yeah. It's like, you got it. Like, whatever the thing is that you're running from, usually is way, way, way less scary than you think it is. You just haven't looked back at it in a long time. This is one of the qualities of trauma, is people who've had trauma, they're always in a hurry. So if you know people who are always like impatient in a rush, jingling, my dad would jingle his keys. He had PTSD. You would jingle his keys. He's always in a rush, in a hurry. And what's happening is they're running. They've been running from this thing that happened to them, and is they feel like it's they're just running from a monster that's not there anymore. But they just think, "Fuck, man, I got to get to the next place. What fucking time is it? How much? We got to get going. Let's move. Let's move. Let's move." Those people, it's trauma usually. A lot of the times,
dude, I do that almost every time on mushrooms. I'm like, I gotta go. As soon as this kicking is like, I gotta move. And I think I'm trying to get away from the trip that's about to happen to me. But like, I translate that to physically have to move instead of like, oh no, dude, it's in your brain. You're taking it with you. You're not getting away from it. And I just keep moving until eventually I just fall on the grass.
Yeah.
Also, what I think people don't understand about bad trips, you can correct me if I'm wrong, if it's different for you, but like, it's a small part of the total trip.
Yeah.
So it's not like 6 hours of bad for a mushroom trip or 12 hours of bad for an acid trip. It's like an hour and a half of bad of a 12-hour acid trip.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. It will change. That's the other, you know, one of the, there's a lot of like, just things you can remind yourself if you feel yourself going into the fucking dark when you're tripping. Number one, it's not going to last. You will not stay there. Number two, the act of trying to evade it is giving it more, it's like inflating a fucking inner tube. The more you're trying to avert your eyes from it, the bigger it gets. If you just sit with it and talk to it, you could say, what are you trying to tell me? What are you teaching me here? What is this? You can be with it. And then you'll realize that it was like this thing that has been inside of you way before you took the drug. And that you just didn't see it. And then that's where you can do the work. My friend who is someone I know who's working in the clinical trials for MDMA said that one of the things people who take the ecstasy, in the way they do it is like months of therapy and then the ecstasy. One person said, I don't know why they call this shit ecstasy. This is not, you know what I mean? Like I was not feeling good. Like wow. I was, you know, it's designed to take you right into the trauma, right into that thing that happened to you that you don't want to think about, that thing that happened to you that that you just don't want to think about. You know, when I got my ball chopped off from cancer, any cancer commercial that would come on.
Yeah.
I would be like, God fucking damn it. And just turn the channel because I didn't want to deal with the fact that I had cancer in my body and I didn't want to deal with the fact that it could come back and I didn't want to deal with the fact they could kill me. And so that was trauma. You know, that's trauma. Trauma is like, fuck that. I don't want to watch. It's not the cancer commercial. I would get angry at like the channel I was watching because it's showing a commercial for some cancer therapy. Wow. Or because it was talking about cancer. I'd be like, motherfuck, what's wrong with them? Why do they show these fucking commercials? You know, because it was like,
but you wouldn't be mad if they were showing car commercials.
No.
Right, exactly.
They can show a mesothelioma fucking commercial, which they show all the time. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, you know, anything to do with cancer was really, or a comic, any comic who would do a cancer joke, anything like that. I'd be like, mother, fuck that joke. You don't fucking know. But it was right, my trauma. It was me. Like, it was a thing in me that I hadn't fully dealt with.
I love when people can't see like I don't think this is funny at all. It's like, is it possible you're too close to it?
Yeah,
is that
man.
A possibility? Because I know when I get mad about stuff, I gotta tell myself like, well, I can hear other people laughing, so chances are it's just me being a stick in the mud. But it's so crazy that you said like that about the name of ecstasy, because the first time I took with you gave me ecstasy for the first time.
Oh, good.
Went to the good bar, we had a great time.
And when I gave it to you, did I not test it first? Test it?
Gave me one, and then you're like, I don't think it's hitting me. And you're like, well, let's wait another little while. And then you're like, time to take another half.
I'm joking. I didn't test it. What the fuck?
I was like, I don't know. Did you? I thought you just like got it and gave me one. Okay. It's not the way I'm remembering it, but maybe I'm wrong. You said it so clearly.
That version of me was like, fuck it. Let's go.
But when I did get it, I was like, oh, no, I know why they call it ecstasy. I completely see it. This is amazing. This is exactly what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Well,
early aughts ecstasy in LA. Oof. So fucking good.
Oof, God. You never, ever, ever.
The dolphins, forget. the Buddhas, I think were my favorite.
Man, that substance can be so healing, and especially in the big first few times you take it. But I think with the psychedelic therapy, the reason you're like, this is not, the idea is to like sort of like pair your wound your psychic wound with that experience of pure bliss and love. And when those two things meet, your trauma, which is an effect of apparently short-term memory, it's a problem of a thing that happened to you that's horrific, being stuck in your short-term memory, it gets, so to speak, refiled. So your brain correctly stores it in the past, because people with trauma, they think it's happening right now. Every day they wake up, they're back in Vietnam. Every day they wake up, they're watching, you know, their friend die.
Beat him or something. Yeah,
yeah. Because it's a short, it's stuck in their short-term memory. Wow, so weird. The MDMA and the therapist helps refile it.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, imagine if I took a bunch of acid, I'm like, this is gonna be a great time. Then my mom's like, hey, we're gonna sit here together for a while. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a terrible trip. This is not gonna be a good time.
Yeah, man.
You suddenly changed it for me. And it's like, yeah, that does make sense. Choosing for treatment is a far different experience.
Far different. Yeah.
Yeah.
But God, Jesus, you'll never forget the first time that beautiful rush of like oceanic divine love comes.
It was amazing. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It was just the feeling. It was like, wow. And by the way, it's a real feeling. Like I've professed love for a woman for the first time on some good Molly. And like the next day, it wasn't like when you're drunk, like, oh, I'm sorry, whatever I said yesterday was crazy. It's like, no, that feeling still resonates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not in it right now, but that was a real feeling that I've taken with me now. We had an emotional connection.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's who I would say it's not just a feeling. It's your actual identity. That's my hippy dippy, you know, viewpoint. Yeah. That's your soul. That's what you are when you scrub all the, it's when you turn the windshield wipers on that and scrub off whatever the your soul is inside of. When you get the muck off the windshield, that's what you are, is that feeling that MDMA gives you a little glimpse of. That is a human being. It's just we get covered up with all this gunk, and the gunk, you know, we start thinking we're the gunk, and then all of a sudden that's when we become real, you know, trepidatious when it comes to expressing love for another person. That's when we become real scared of admitting we love ourselves. And then, you know, this is the human, this is neurosis, you know. And
if I say I love you to a friend, it's going to be like, it's going to call you gay, or it's going to be like weird, are you sticking your neck out, this might get in the way of our friendship now, or like,
I love you, Ari.
I've known you long enough to like, I'm not worried about this being weird. We're like, we're 20 year friends.
But I took ecstasy before this show, actually. I'm just kidding. Dude, I gotta go.
Let's wrap this up though. But I want to say the Midnight Gospel is out. It'll be out. I'm gonna release this on the 18th or 19th. So it'll be out
on the
20th on Netflix. All the episodes coming out at once?
Yep. All 8 episodes come out at once.
Okay. So you can tell me that's a bad idea or not. Maybe watch it twice. But I got to imagine, under the supervision for you of a therapist, watching that show on acid would be such a tremendously great idea. And are you allowed to say where all this stuff comes from? Like what you told me a long time
ago? Yeah. Yeah, man. I can tell. Netflix is so cool. Yeah,
I've been keeping it a secret a long time because you're like, I don't know.
Dude, when I was Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going.
This is how cool Netflix is. When, you know, because I feel very passionately about coming out of the psychedelic closet, so to speak. I think it doesn't do anyone any good if you hide the fact that you have from time to time used psychedelics. And so in this board meeting with Netflix after they... when we were talking about the show, there's this creature in the show that's got a lantern head. It's like a bovine cow-like animal with a lantern head. And I remember telling them, yeah, that's a vision I had on DMT. I saw these weird cow things that had like technological spinning, glowing green lantern heads. And it was such a powerful vision. When I looked away, I looked back and it was still there. Like, you know what I mean? Like I've rarely have had that kind of whatever you want to call it. I don't want to call it hallucination. A vision. But I remember saying, like, hearing the words come out of my mouth as I'm saying it to these executives, you know, and they laughed and they were like, that's awesome. Netflix is cool as fuck, man. That's and they're definitely like aware of They know me very well. I got to be friends with the executives I worked with on this show in a real way. And like, yeah, when I interviewed Pendleton for my podcast, I said to him the thing that people are saying about this show to me, and it's okay if they do, which is, dude, what drugs? Did you take psychedelics that inspired Adventure Time? And his answer was like, no, I didn't. And he had no reason to lie about that.
Yeah.
But now the problem is when people are asking me or making a comment like, what drugs were they on when they, what drugs was he on when he made this? It's like, you know, you want me to name one?
It's all different ones. It's all came together.
Because to me, you know, the way I look at it is visionary states of consciousness are good for the world. And that if you are somebody who enjoys psychedelics and you have the ability to bring the thing that you witnessed out there into this dimension in a way that's understandable to other people, then you become, I think you become a kind of conduit or a translator for a transcendent realm that is always
talking about that, about getting there. You see, you can get there through meditation, but I'm like, I can't, but like, maybe you can. But it was like, that's why I always say when people are coming back from a trip and they're like halfway, one foot in there, and they're like talking nonsense, write that shit down, because they're like trying to translate and they don't know all the current language.
That's
but
it.
Like, yeah. Is it still like stuff from your podcast that you've now set to like animation?
Yeah.
A lot of that.
The best way to understand, Pendleton describes it perfectly. It's like, imagine what would happen if you took the dialogue of Indiana Jones and replaced it with a podcast conversation. And it creates a naturally comedic effect if you put people in, because in this show, the character that I play, Clancy, lives in an alternate dimension called the Chromatic Ribbon, where they have these multiverse simulators, these simulators that simulate not just one universe, but infinite universes from which they harvest technology. Because the idea is like, if you could simulate, you know, just this, the galaxy that we're in right now, then you could pull from the galaxy the works of Shakespeare, the splitting of the atom.
Electricity to a dimension that doesn't have electricity.
Neil Young. There's so many things that you could pull out of it. It would be an amazing thing. So, you know, this is my character. Clancy has moved to this place and has a malfunction. He doesn't know how to take care of his multiverse simulator, and because of that, every universe within the simulator is going through an apocalypse, and because he's just not taking care of it, and so he can't really get technology to come out of the damn thing, so he's decided just to go in there and interview these beings who are in the dying worlds, and so that's
straight audio from Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so fucking weird and cool. Man, when you told me about it, I was like, so like all these comics, it's tough to call us artists, but like, you know, in whatever non-douchey way we are, but it's like, they each have their own specific like technique and like specific moral code, like artistic moral code. Like, this is the kind of shit I'm into. You remixing on your apartment all the time on fucking, you know, on Sunset. It's like, when you told me the idea, I'm like, it goes so specifically well with your sense of humor. It's so clearly created by the creator instead of just being in some sitcom where you'd also be like, hey, congratulations. But like, it just makes me happy that actual people can make the shit they intend to make.
Man, thank you. Thank you. And thank God for Pendleton Ward. And thank God for Netflix rolling the fucking dice. You know, I like, it's because of Penn, you know, because like he is a genius. And he listened to my podcast before I even knew him. And because he like went into Netflix with me with this pitch, they still rolled the dice, because it's like, I don't know of anything like it. And maybe like Dr. Katz or something, or I don't, but that's not a good descriptor either. So, and they did, they're like the, you know, I don't know if you've heard about Netflix as far as like how they creative. Oh yeah, they are very, very pro artist, and they're very, very. Yeah. But that doesn't mean they're opinionless. You know what I mean? But their opinions are good and constructive.
It was Norm saying, like, testing them, like, can I name my stand-up special of Hitler's dog? If you say I could do anything, and they're like, yeah, we said anything.
That's what they're like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what they're like. And like, yeah, I don't know what's going on over there, but it's something really good. I know they do a lot of like retreats, and I have a feeling that, like, I don't know what's going on, but it's like I'm a big fan, not just because they gave me money for a show, but because they let us make the thing that we made, which I don't know of any other.
I think what they're smart about is they know, like, different things appeal to different people, and they don't, like, network TV at 8:30 p.m. on NBC, 10 years ago, has to appeal to the most amount of people. This does not. A fucking Christian, person would never, let's just say, would never watch this. What I mean? But they have Christian programming that I would never watch. And exactly. It's okay, because it's the best this preacher wants to put out to these people. And the fucking kids programming is also not for me. So make it great for kids. Don't make it a little less great for kids so it'll include me. And that's this shit is like perfect for the type of fans, type of people who are like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. Like when you were 12 and you saw SNL for the first time, you're like, TV can be amazing.
Thank you, Ari. Yeah, I'm
excited to see it. I'm excited for you to see it too, man.
And I'm really grateful that you gave me the time on your show to plug it, man. And I hope I get to see you after this pandemic ends in the flesh.
Yeah. We'll fight zombies off together.
Make love again. I'll see you later, Ari. Bye. Superman or Green Lantern ain't got another. You're puzzling to see. Yep. I get you, you can just sit there while thinking on your velvet throne. Got all the rainbows so you can.
Episode, everybody. That's the episode, everybody. All right. Fucking Duck and Trussell. Images. You got to watch it. I hope everybody watches it. Midnight Gospel. Here's the art. Oh, my God. It's so cool. It's so cool. Dude, I saw a fucking episode of Adventure Time on acid. I said that with Lee Syatt. And it was just blew my fucking mind. Can you see this? Hopefully you can see it. Look how fucking badass that is. Oh, so fucking cool. Oh yeah, sorry for the people who are not on what's it called? Should I have not shown my fucking computer? There's gotta be some shit there that's gonna fucking get me in trouble. Well, what are you gonna do? I'm definitely going to look at it. That's the episode. You guys, please, watch the show, Midnight Gospel on Netflix, starting 4:20. Probably out right now if you listen to it right now. And do me a favor. Subscribe to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Go watch Duncan Trussell's. I'll put a link to it on the website, arishafir.com. I'll put a link to his This Is Not Happening story about taking some acid and having a bad trip. It was a fucking good one. What else? I'll put a link to that. Check out a show. Is Midnight Duncan Trussell Family Hours podcast. Subscribe to that. Watch his show. And subscribe to my new YouTube channel, guys. I'm really trying to get it going. If you don't take the yoga, that's okay. We also got 21 Jump Street podcast, which is called Sixth and Jump, with me, Dan Soder, and Big J Okerson. I'm having a great time doing it. So this podcast, as you might know from listening, my recording, I stared directly into that light and now I can't really see. This podcast is about kind of like exploring the world, trying to understand. Skeptic does not mean, a lot of people understand this. Michael Shermer knows. A skeptic doesn't mean I don't believe you or I think you're lying. Skeptic means show me. Show me. That's all. You might be right, but can you prove it to me, please? A skeptic wants to investigate all the time. That's what this is. Skeptic Tank, which is when I got the title for the show, it was like,
you know, like an inquisitive mind with, you know, septic tank, that play on words, which is like, yeah, potty humor. I'm dirty. I like dirty stuff. So anyway, that's always like investigative and funny too, but you know, but I miss the idea of doing like, so I love going on Legion of Skanks. I miss in your mom's house. I love morning zoos also. Just let it all hang out. Let it loose. And this show, Sixth and Jump, is us. It's me, Soder, and Big J just having a fucking good time. Just laughing. It's like, it's cathartic for me to record the podcast. Check that out. You can start with the first one. You don't have to have watched any 21 Jump Street to watch and or listen to the first episode of Sixth and Jump. We're talking about what we're about to do, and it was so fun. Then you got to start watching, and it tells you where to watch. And the yoga shit I do, and the Skeptic Tank. The Skeptic Tank clips up there too. Little like pieces from the episode. Fan art. This guy Colin O'Neill made these weirdo fucking edits from different podcasts and puts weird video over it. Any fan, by the way, if you want to send in, tweet it. At Skeptic Tank Pod, or go to the Instagram at Skeptic Tank Pod. We should have an email address. But if you want to do some weird fan art, some cartoon of any animation for some like piece of it, I'll put it up. I'll give you some cash. Not much, but like, I don't know, $50, maybe $100. I don't know what's fair. It's like, I don't want to fucking pay anyone to do it, because it's like, if it's like bad, it'd be like, this made me smile, but I'm not going to put it up, you know? I'm not going to fucking force anybody to do it, but I don't know. If you want to with your free time, I'll fucking slide you some cash. At least $50 if we use it. That's fair. I know it's underpaid, but I pay the guests $100. And I pay them more than anybody pays them. So it's like, well, I can't pay you more than pay the fucking guests. Anyway, whatever. I struggle with it all the time, properly paying fucking artists. I try my best. So that's the episode, you guys. It's funny to see how Duncan, how much he's changed since he's had a kid. Isn't it? It changes people. He's the guy who got me into all this fucking drug shit. I mean, definitely ecstasy. Definitely ecstasy. Oh, and by the way, now they have MDMA and also ecstasy. They have Pure Mandy and Molly, and they'll also have Cut Up With Speed ecstasy. So it's like, sometimes you're like, no, I want the ecstasy. I don't want Molly. I want a mixture. Huh, what a great drug time we're living in. What the fuck with the goddamn... What's that one drug we were just talking about in the podcast? Fentanyl. You're ruining everything. I'm more mad at fentanyl than I am at fucking the coronavirus. That's not even a joke. I mean, it's a joke that I'm saying it in that context, but like, I think I really mean that. His statements on the coronavirus versus... statements. Comments. that's like saying Peyton Manning's comments on Omaha Steaks. Like, no, those weren't comments. He was snap counts. Omaha, 42. That's not. He's not. That's about the same level. Duncan, I had my notes. What else was I going to put in there? Psychedelic Christmas, ex epileptic. I don't know what that means. Oh, and there's just a bunch of fucking possibilities for teasers at the beginning. Emmanuel Seferius. Anybody know him? Can you get us in touch with each other? I'll have him on as a guest if Duncan recommends him. Dude, I remember the first time I took... I mean, I guess I shouldn't go into it now. I'm just going to go into the first time I took... When was the first time I took acid? I don't... No. I took mushrooms, I know. La Jolla, the condo, slight amount. And then story I told with Pete Carboni on This Not Happening was the first like real mushroom trip I had. First time I took like a cap. Fucking pussy. I don't know when the first time I took acid was. It might have been... I remember taking some acid at Bonnaroo one year. We went to see Billy Joel, and I'd already taken mushrooms, and you got to wait a few days at least for the mushrooms to kick in to like your antibodies kind of to go away or whatever, because it's poison, so your body's like driving it out. So if you take mushrooms the next day, you got to take twice as much because your body's like, nah, I already know how to drive this out. That's not science. That's me. Yep. So, yep, also. What was I going to say? Oh. I think it might have been at Billy Joel. I took some mushrooms. It wasn't kicking in. And I was like, nah, I took acid. And then that wasn't kicking in, so I took a bunch of mushrooms. I didn't want to take more acid because I don't know if that was my first time, though. I didn't want to take more acid because then I was like, what if it doesn't kick in? And then once I take the second time, then the first one kicks in. You know, like one of the times there was this waitress in La Jolla at the Comedy Store, and she made great edibles before they were like legal in stores. And she goes, I would take half. If that doesn't hit you in about an hour or about 45 minutes, she said, take the other half. Good advice. I waited 44 minutes. And I was like, to my friend, Matt Nose, I was like, hey, this hasn't hit me. I'm going to take the other half. And he goes, this is such great advice, such sage wisdom. He goes, sure, you can take the other half. We were staying at the condo. It didn't matter. He goes, you can take the other half. But just so you know, from where I'm looking, this is how those stories start. And I was like, yeah, good point. I'm going to wait 5 minutes. 3 minutes later, like right at 47 minutes, the half kicked in. And I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't take this. So that year at Bonnaroo with Billy Joel, I was like, the acid wasn't kicking in. Obviously, I was just having a fun drug time. Billy Joel, I would not consider that a fucking smart place to do. The right place to do. It's always smart, but the right place to do acid. But so I took a bunch of mushrooms because I was like, I don't want to double up on the acid. So one of each. One of them will kick in. I think they both kicked in. It was great. Yeah, I don't know what the first time I did acid was. I wish I did, but I don't. Actually, it's probably pretty cool that I don't. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Yeah, I can't wait for this fucking show. I can't wait for this fucking show, The Midnight Gospel. It's going to be rad. I got to take some fucking... Yeah, you can't get acid in quarantine. Unless you already got some, or you got a friend who's like, leave it in my mailbox and I'll go get it later. There's no way you're going to be able to get some acid. I can't get any. So, whatever. I have mushrooms with me, but it's like... you can't take them. I can't go wandering around. Because, like, then you'll break quarantine. You'll come in contact with something. Horrible disease is this. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's the episode. For Duncan Trussell. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the episode. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 382, Psychedelic Christmas. For Duncan Trussell, I'm Ari Shaffir, saying, so long! I fucking got it that time! I fucking got it that time!
This is an experiment in mind formation. Information. Forming. Controlling. Operating your mind and your brain. Using digital techniques. Overload. Scramble. Confuse. Unfocus. Your mind. State of the brain is chaos. We're dealing with a complexity of information. The first thing to do is to overwhelm your focused mind, your linear mind, by overloading signals, digital patterns, clusters of photons and electrons, which produce pleasant state of confused chaos. This is the state of the brain when it is ready to be informed, that is, to be reprogrammed. The human brain contains 100 billion neurons. Each neuron is as powerful as a large computer, and each neuron has around 10,000 connections with other neurons. Within our foreheads, there is a chaos. Inside our brains, there is a galaxy of information, which is incomprehensible to our linear minds. This contrasts and compares perfectly with the chaos without. We're living in a universe which has 100 billion galaxies, each galaxy with star systems, planets, a complexity, again, which to our minds right now is chaotic, incomprehensible. Times we are afraid because we want order. We can't deal with the confusion and the disorder. We want form. We want rules. Yes, throughout human history, there have been people, religious leaders, political leaders, who will give you order. They'll give you rules and commandments. But chaos is basically good. Relax, surf the waves of chaos, and learn how to redesign your own realities. Sit back. Flow. Open your eyes. Turn off your mind. Unfocus. And let the waves of chaos roll over your brain. Float. Drift. Zoom. Design. Create. New order. Your order, your style, from chaos. Yes. Chaos. Yeah. human life to know thyself. Think for yourself. Question authority. Think with your friends. Create. Create new realities. Philosophy is a team sport. Philosophy is the ultimate aphrodisiac pleasure. Learning how to operate your brain. Learning how to operate your mind. Learning how to redesign chaos. The religious leaders and the political leaders want to give you orders to run your life, to determine how you think. The basic goal is to operate your own mind. Operate for yourself. Around 3,000 years ago, a group of human beings in Athens, Greece, developed a new philosophy. The basic religion of humanity is called humanism. Socrates said, the aim of human life is to know thyself. Create and design your own order in the chaos. Socrates did not give commandments. Socrates did not impose order. Socrates asked questions. He encouraged his friends to speculate, to design, to create, to interact your own versions of reality. Socrates said, the way to perform philosophy is in small groups, raising questions, learning from each other, changing your mind, growing together, thinking together. The religious leaders said, you can't say that, Socrates. The gods are in control. Who are you to say you have to say? How dare you think you can know? Gods determine. Sacrifice to the gods. Obey the gods. Socrates said, no. Look within. For that, he gave Socrates the hemlock because he dared tell people, think for yourself, question authority. You must learn how to reprogram, reform, inform your own brain. To do this, to take responsibility for your brain, it is necessary to question everything that you have been taught, to question authority, to learn, to take the brave step of taking responsibility for operating your brain, for designing, redesigning, reforming the chaos within. Throughout human history, as our species has faced the frightening, terrorizing fact that we do not know who we are or where we're going in this ocean of chaos, it has been the authorities, the political, the religious, the educational authorities who attempted to comfort us by giving us order, rule, regulations, forming in our minds their view of reality. To think for yourself, you must question authority. and learn how to put yourself in a state of vulnerable, open-mindedness, chaotic, confused vulnerability to inform yourself. Question authority. Then came Marshall McLuhan in the 1950s. McLuhan said, in the Socratic sense, the medium is the message. The words you use, the modes of communication you use, determine the realities you inhabit. Most of our lives, most of us live in realities determined by others, imprinted in our brains by education, by religion, by politics, by the authorities. McLuhan said, if you want to change your mind, change the medium, change the words you use, change the mode of communication. If you change the medium, change yourself, you change your society. In the 1960s, a new mode of communication developed, television. The kids growing up in the 1950s learned how to tune in, turn on, turn off, select, determine what hits your eyeballs. You control your eyeballs and your eardrums. You direct and manage the media that program your brain. McLuhan said, who controls the media is programming your mind and programming your brain.
You think you watch a lot of television? Listen to this. Your brain, you must understand how to use your eyes. Oh, say, can you see? Oh, say, can't you see what's being done to your eyes? Who controls your eyeballs controls your mind, imprints your brain. Oh, say, can't you see that the messages that hit your eyeballs in modern television are creating realities, imprinting messages from the sponsors who are not usually interested in And you're learning how to design your own realities. Warning. Who controls your screens? Controls, programs your mind. Your eyes are the windows of your brain. The eyes are extensions of your brain. The eyes are made up of hundreds of layers of neurons, rods, and cones. Your eyeballs deal with one energy. It's light. Through your eyes come illumination, vision, perception, enlightenment, illumination. Your eyes are the windows of your soul. Who controls your eyeballs? Programs your brain. Learn how to dial, fine-tune your eyeballs. Learn how to unfocus your eyes. Dilate your pupils. Learn how to open up to illumination and light. And then refocus and redesign your own linear order, your own designs, your own language. To the pupil. On in this demonstration, the message of Ralph Waldo Emerson, the first and probably the greatest American philosopher, who said, divinity lies within. Don't look to the churches or to the big marble institutions. Your divinity lies within. You must learn to operate your brain, operate your soul, learn how to communicate brain to brain, soul to soul, with other people. Your divinity lies within. mind realities. If you operate your own brain skillfully, you can learn to design your own realities. Learn how to communicate in the language of the brain, electrons and photons. We are doing this now. We're sending messages from our brains using the vehicle of electrons and photons to your eyeballs. As we watch this screen, our minds are bedazzled, our minds are softened, our linear, sharp, logical thinking is gentle, and we're communicating brain to brain. We're using the electron, computer circuits, to feed each other's brains with light. First paragraph, the first attempt, the first child's primer in how to communicate using both the orderly left brain and the chaotic, confusing language of photons and electrons. The brain is a photo war. Your brain and my brain, our brains, live on light, just as the body needs air and carbohydrates. Our brains are starved for light, for illumination, for revelation. Use your head. Learn how to operate your brain. The brain is designed to design reality. He told us that the aim of evolution is for us to use media to create what we all want, the global village, the language which can be understood by every human being, by every brain, the basic language of humanity, the language of the brain, lights, sound. Rhythms, pulsating your bones, moving your body. We all know this language. We can all sing and dance this language of electrons, of radio waves, of rhythms. Now we have digital communication. We can create our fantasies
We can create our rhythms, design on screens. A new language will develop, a global language, not based on letters, not based on grammars, a language which we all understand, based on clusters and waves of light and sound. Celebrate, we all glory in the light, the illumination, the contact, the intersection, the interaction around the world, the language of form. We will create a language of international global brain link-up. Anyone in any culture watching this screen will get the general picture. It's one global village. It's one global human spirit, one global human race. As we link up through screens, linked by electrons and photons, we will create for the first time a global humanity, not separated by words or minds, or nationalities, or religious biases. Now, listen to the message from the sponsor. There is one global human race. We're just now learning to communicate brain to brain, soul to soul.